This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, hello from across the pond, from the country that has produced 100% of all of the men's Royal Rumble winners this decade, Drew McIntyre's home country. We are here, your special relations are back, my hangover is just about gone, and we're here to continue through our collective GWW picks. As you can tell, I'm still a bit excited from Sunday. It's now my new number one choice. But anyway, since it's ineligible, we'll just move on. As always, I'm joined by the Limey Lothario himself, Ben Locke. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm very, very good, Caleb. Is Drew going to be British until WrestleMania till he loses and then he goes back to being Scottish? Yeah, is that how we're doing it?
That's how you tend to do it with Andy Murray. So, you know, why break the habit of a lifetime?
There we go.
So he could be the first British world champion since, oh Christ, I'll bring it up, 1966. Okay, you did well. I'll give you that. So it's been a while. We are also joined by PTBN's favourite villain, fuck Marty Scurll. It's Aston Villa's own Rory McNamara. Rory, how are you?
I'm very well, my man. One, I'm very glad you explained what villain meant to the 99.9% of people listening to this who would have thought you meant something quite different. And I've always been more of a Jockey Wilson man myself.
Of course. Oh, Jockey, yeah.
I was going to say, and Peter Wright's the current darts world champion. So, you know, another Scotland's finest, even though he's got, you know, he's one of those fake Scottish people like Rod Stewart. But, you know, we'll...
Scotland is to professional wrestling what Scotland is to darts. That's the two ends of the athletic spectrum. So, from what you've heard on episode 3, we tried to go through our top 100 WWE picks. We tried very hard. We did not try hard enough. We got to number 61, I believe, Jens, is that correct?
Number 61, yes.
Number
we
61.
Did, we didn't even get halfway up the mountain.
We did not. So we are back. We are determined to get this finished for you tonight. We're going to be a lot more concise, he says right at the start, knowing there's fuck all chance that's actually going to go all the way through. But we will do our best. Bear with us. And if this ends up going over two parts, you'll find part B also on the feed straight away, because we don't want you having to, you know, waste your WrestleMania time listening to us talk about stuff that happened in the 80s, even though we'll probably be talking about stuff that happened in the 80s at WrestleMania time.
Are you talking about WrestleMania 38? You know, what's going to happen first? Us finishing our top 100 or the Iron Sheik finally getting to the ring?
Oh, fuck the Iron Sheik, definitely. Absolutely. So, speaking of the feed, I think probably best that we just go through what else is happening on PTBN land just now. So, speaking of the Royal Rumble, I'll bring it up as much as I can. The 2020 Royal Rumble was this Sunday. Drew McIntyre did win. He is going to WrestleMania.
Bing.
Nate and the gang are back with their Chain Reaction podcast, breaking down the 2020 Royal Rumble, which was headlined by Drew McIntyre winning the Royal Rumble.
Why am I hoping for a 10-second Brock squash now?
Drew McIntyre won the Rumble. I've not heard this. What?
I'll talk you through it. It came in at number 16, and I'll tell you all of them. Scott and Dr. G check in with a special main event reaction show, which takes a look at NWA Hard Times, baby.
No Scottish representation there, though.
Bram wrestled in ICW. The same ICW whose only Hall of Famer was Drew McIntyre, winner of the 2020 Royal Rumble.
There you go.
on a new No Holds Barred. JT and Aaron are back bringing Listomania. And they kick off things by ranking every Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Obviously, it happened before Sunday, or 2020 would have been top of the list, clearly. In this month's Body Pressure Luck, two-time champion Ryan Everett defends his wrestling trivia crown against Steve Williams and Jason Sherman. JT, Jenny and D'Amato are back, getting extreme on PTBN's Extreme Three-Way Dance, where they dive into 4 weeks of ECW television from the fall of 1994. With this ring number four, joins Ryan and Cindy continuing to look at WrestleMania rematches. And on the newest Talking WCW, Tim, Jenny and Greg break down matches, three matches of the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. Also be sure to check out the PTBN pop feed, littered with great content, offering tremendous shows like the Hard Travelling Fanboys, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theatre, DC4U, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, The Brother-Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, The Journey Through Infinity, I'm led to believe, and more. On our social media pages, the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament is now underway. We are in round two. There'll be four matches per day, so make sure to like our tournament page, follow on Facebook and Twitter, so you don't miss a single one. We normally do our votes at this point, but we've taken a group decision that we know nothing about 1970s US sitcoms, so we'll just gracefully bow out here and just wait for The Office to come back on, probably. We have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, also determined the greatest WCW match ever. You'll have all year to research, promote matches and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to forget to check out PlaceMination.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports and pop culture, including Trent SmackDown and Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crowe, Polly's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Easy for me to say. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly walk around the web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner at the right-hand side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. So when you buy your 2020 Royal Rumble DVDs, that's where you go. I know I will.
That's the last time you're doing the read. Release until after May when we can maybe rub your nose in it. 10-second squash, come on.
Just you wait. I'll be doing, see if Drew McIntyre, when Drew McIntyre wins, I'll be doing a one-man show, pissed out my nut, making sure that he gets the recognition he deserves as the new World Heavyweight Champion. What a guy!
It will be a one-man show, I can guarantee you that. Hey, don't forget, though, I still edit all of these. And just, you know.
That's fine. I'll make my way at another show. I'll be a Russian hacker, and I'll make sure I got on to something.
He's going to stop at nothing.
I will stop at nothing. I will hack something. Anyway, so shall we proceed, gentlemen?
Let's do this.
Okay, so we just keep going in the same order that we did before. So that would be you first, Ben, and then myself, and then Mr. McNamara.
It's been a very sad couple of days. We will start with number 60. Obviously, rest in peace, Kobe, and the other eight guys and girls on there.
Yes.
Let's get that out of the way. Absolutely. Few people. There's only a few people who transcend their sport, and Kobe is one of those people. You know, I think I can speak for us all. We don't probably know bugger all about basketball. We all know who Kobe Bryant was, and absolute tragedy what happened. Yeah. You know, especially after everything that happened here. You know, when everything happened in Leicester, we obviously been through all this ourselves. Very sad. Sorry to bring the mood down, guys. I'll try and bring it back up now.
No, not at all. It's things like that that you can't ignore. No,
absolutely not.
It's tragic all round. What will not be tragic, hopefully, is that we'll
yes.
aim to lighten everyone's moods as only we can try.
Good segue. I like that. I like that.
Thank you.
Right, so let's go. Number 60, because I know my number 60 is a lot higher on one person's list. So if you could just humour me for a second for a story. I told you in the last podcast, I'd pretty much got my order sorted except for two matches, one of which came up earlier, or in the last episode, with Cena Lesnar from SummerSlam. This is the second match. One of my colleagues on this very podcast said, oh, I'm about to watch this match now. And I was like, why have I not put this in my list? I should have done. So it ended up, it started at number 74. It's ended up here at number 60. It is for the Intercontinental Championship, Randy Orton versus Mick Foley from Backlash 2004.
Sit tight.
Yep, I have that higher. So my number 60 is Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock, Goldust, and the Legion of Doom versus Bret, Owen Hart, Brian Pillman, Jim Neidhart, and the British Bulldog from Canadian Stampede.
Sit tighter.
Yeah.
And here's one I think we can talk about. Somebody had this in their list in part three. My number 60, Chris Jericho versus Rey Mysterio, Intercontinental title versus Mask at the Bash 2009.
That was me. I think it was about, let me have a look.
It was not in my list.
Yeah, it was me. I had it at number 93.
Brilliant. We can actually talk about a match now. Fantastic. Jericho Mysterio.
Just a really, you know, from a time period where I don't remember much, I just remember this feud was excellent. You know, the whole thing with Jericho, you know, being in the crowd when Ray was doing his little face plant with the fan, you know, with the young fans, and he absolutely beats the shit out of him on backstage. I can't remember if this is the one with the walk down interview as well. That might have been Extreme Rules.
That's Extreme Rules, yeah.
That interview is brilliant. But this match is a much better match. Two technical marvels, two veterans at this stage of their career. And it's frightening to think that we're in 2020 and they're still going strong today, 11 years later.
There's a lot to be said for, if you have the ability to do it, to book your own feud, which is what these two did with this one.
Yeah.
Something Jericho did with somebody else not a year earlier, it must be said. You almost think this guy's got a mind for the business or something. This is one I watched all four, I think it was actually, of their big matches they had at this time. All incrementally better than the last, all building on the last. And as such, the last is the one I picked.
Yeah.
Safely, solidly, number 60. I built a lot of other matches both before and after my list around this one. I think this is where we start getting into the big 4.5 as I look down my list. Yeah. Playing off the previous, which is something I always like when you play off your previous matches. Ray just being one step ahead of the wily veteran Jericho right at the end by something as simple as wearing another mask. This stuff doesn't need to be rocket science. We can fill in the gaps ourselves. And as you say, Ben, the work was so tight in this match. Didn't put a foot wrong for 20 minutes. Bit of a forgotten one, I think. Bit of a forgotten feud, but it really shouldn't be. Check it out. Jericho versus Ray from the Bash 2009 is my number 60.
Lovely. Ben, number 59.
Okay, 59. So again, wait till the very end. It is Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental Championship in a ladder match from SummerSlam 95.
Not yet.
I have that one higher, yep.
Okay. Your go, Callum?
My go. So, another one from 1997. It's Bret Hart versus The Undertaker versus Steve Austin versus Vader, the WWE title in a Final Four match at Final Four.
I had that about, let me have a look, I think it was about 70, if I remember rightly. 72, I had that.
And I have it at another number.
Okay.
Okay, look.
59 for me. It's Ray again, this time versus Kurt Angle, opening SummerSlam 02.
Not on mine.
I think I have that one higher. I'm just going to check for you. If I can, bloody hell. Yes, I do. So,
onward.
Yeah. Rocketing through.
Indeed.
58. Again, it's another listen to the end. Bret Hart versus Owen Hart for the WWF title from SummerSlam 1994.
I have that one higher.
As do I.
Excellent.
back to me again. I keep losing my place, man. Yes, found that again. So my slightly more modern is Aleister Black versus the Velveteen Dream from the first War Games.
Number 96 for me.
For those of us who haven't heard numbers 100 to 61, no NXT matches in my list. But I'm not anti-NXT, Tim Capel, okay? I shall let the experts take the field for this one.
So, on you go, Ben, because you're more of an NXT person than myself.
For me, this match almost has become the definition of a show stealer for me. Just a match you would just not expect to be as good as it was. And this is the brilliance of NXT. They could build a feud over a guy not saying another guy's name. Forget the work in the ring for a second. You built a whole feud on somebody not saying somebody else's name. Just to get people invested in that. I think, you know, it was like second or third match on. So it wasn't being highlighted in any way. But the crowd just bit on it for those 15, 20 minutes. And it was the first time when I thought, yeah, this guy, when I'm referring to the Dream when I say this guy's got it. And he was, what, 22 or 23 at that stage?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. That was the first time that, same with me. Like, yeah, it's a light bulb moment that you thought, yeah. this guy's got a bit about him. He's not just some random guy off Tough Enough trying to be Prince. He's actually quite good. I don't think Aleister Black had been in NXT for very long at that point. It's like I'd seen him a couple of times in ICW back when he was Tommy End. But it was. He's obviously a hell of a guy between the ropes, but Velveteen Dream, he kept up with him every single step of the way, and you're thinking, this guy is good.
I mean, there's two bits to it. There, that moments when it's just think of it straight away. The moment when Dream's mimicking Aleister Black's pose. And then they're just looking at each other about 5 minutes into the match, and you're like, "Yeah, this is going to be something good." And then obviously the bit at the end when the Dream's coming round, and you know, he gets I can't even remember the exact quote now, but it's something like, "You will be forever in infamy, a Velveteen Dream," or something like that. And I was like, "Yeah, this is it. I know where we're going now." With both guys.
And it was a slight pause. He was like, "You'll live forever in infamy."
That was it.
Dot, Velveteen Dream. Like, oh, and here you go. Excellent.
And the crowd, and when the crowd just popped for a name. You know, it's just like they were waiting.
as you guys were saying about the Jericho Ray match, it's not difficult. It's not rocket science. It is,
no.
You know, just a simple thing. Like being disrespectful for not saying the guy's name. And as soon as he says it, boom. Excellent. Get the reaction. You get the reaction you want. Shall we move on?
Done with that? We will. Number 57 from Monday Night Raw from the 29th of December. Sorry.
I can understand why you would have forgotten me there, but... We've got some proper wrestling to talk about here. None of this newfangled flippy crap. Not doing myself any favours there. My number 58 is Bret Hart versus The Undertaker for the WWF title from SummerSlam 97.
I haven't got it.
Not on mine, no.
Okay. This is one of those where every time I watch it, I'm transported back to the living room. It's about 2:45 a.m. on a Monday morning. I'm 15 years old. I am numero uno super duper Bret Hart fan because I'm from the UK, so I had to be at that time. At least in the UK, they respect great wrestlers like us. And I was, my brother was number one Undertaker fan. So, you know, a bit of needle there.
Nobody's perfect.
I do think the work was better in their one night only match, but that one hasn't made my list. It wasn't far off, but not quite enough. The reason this one did, and the fact it's finished so relatively high, even though at times it is a little bit slow and Sean is a little overbearing, shock horror, as referee sometimes, but he generally plays it okay, for the final 2 minutes, which I think might very well be one of the finest screwy finishes in WWF history. Everything is played to immaculate perfection, right down to Britt nailing the spit. You could tell he enjoyed that one. Sean rocking back. The timing on Brett docking is perfect. And one thing as well we don't really notice when Sean's there, he's reluctantly counting, because if you can see the angel and devil on his shoulder, which one of these is he going to do, is Brett makes the cover in the exact place where Sean has to look him right in the eyes. Now that is storytelling, ladies and gentlemen. Bret Hart, Undertaker, SummerSlam 1997. Not for everybody. It's a long 27 minutes. But a good 25-minute match between Bret Hart and Undertaker, i.e. yeah, not the Royal Rumble 96, with that finish on the top, definitely list-worthy. Number 58.
Yeah, like you say, just the Sean's conflictedness, if that's not a word, but, you know, you could just tell he was like you say, oh, I'm going to be in so much shit either way, whatever I do. And that was storyline telling at its peak in 97.
This is the one where Brett debuts we always talk about the figure of four, where he debuts the around the ring post sharpshooter as well.
Ooh.
Which didn't look very good, but moving on. Not enough to take this one out of my list.
Let me get better.
Now it's your turn, Benjamin.
I thank you for giving me the floor, Rory. So
my number 57 is.
Quite right.
So I did give a little bit of a giveaway. So from Monday Night Raw, from the 29th of December 2003, for the World Heavyweight Championship, Triple H versus Shawn Michaels.
A good match, but not on my list.
It's not on mine either.
Okay, so I watched this match again a couple of weeks ago. It still holds up. It's about 30 minutes long, which for a TV match, even in 2003, that is a very, very long time. It's in San Antonio, so it's Sean's people. And I just love the whole thing of how can I put it? Just every 70s and 80s wrestling trope is in this match, and the fans bite on every single one. You know, Triple H arguing with the ref. Triple H does an abdominal stretch right by the rope so Flair can put a hand in so, you know, he can assist. I don't know why that works in wrestling. It just does. And a ref bump as well. Fans usually hate ref bumps. They were loving it in this match. Sean was obviously getting into a lot of shit for the way he was covering people in 2003. They built that into the finish of the match as well. Even Bischoff, as the special guest ref at the end, does a great job. If you haven't seen it for a while, put it back on. Number 57, is a worthy place for it.
Good stuff. It was a good... I remember it being a good match. I remember it being really, really hacked off by the finish. But that's just because I was a big Shawn Michaels mark at the time. I didn't know any better. But no, it was a good choice.
I think it's like Rory said even in the last match, a screw finish sometimes, if it's done right, works. And this did work because it wasn't like Sean wasn't doing that whole lame back cover just. He'd been doing it for about 2-3 months previous. So he was going to get caught out with it eventually. Mm. It was just a case of when.
And also in that match's favour, it's not the match the next month at the Royal Rumble.
No.
Punch, lie down for a nine count. Punch, lie down for a nine count. Punch, lie down.
They either do epically good or epically shit. There's no in between with these pair.
See Bad Blood 2004.
Or rather don't. And you say our shows are too long. There we go.
So my number 57 is from NXT Arrival. It is Sami Zayn versus Cesaro.
I did not have that match. I had the 2 out of 3. That one is not on my list.
You don't need to welcome me.
I thought I'd just be polite anyway.
Too kind. On you go, son. On you go.
So I've never seen the 2 out of 3 falls match that was on Ben's list. I have seen the arrival match. It was a very good. It was a very, very good match at the time. It's now turned into. If you look at this match now, you might just think it's typical NXT takeover fare. But at the time, it was a developmental guy. On the first time they were, NXT was really on a big stage on the network, and he was going toe to toe with Cesaro, who was just about to get. One of his biggest pushes. This was just before he won the Andre Battle Royal, so he was on his way up, but he's still been a pretty heavily featured guy, for better or for worse, in terms of his success on the main roster. But it was a guy who no one had seen before, doing sort of going hell for leather to beat the guy. Sammy stories are always really, really, really easy to get behind and understand. So there never really is one Sammy Zayn story in NXT. But this one was perfect for a perfect arrival on the big stage for Sammy.
I like the pun. That was very good.
Thank you.
No, it's an excellent match, and it was also the first match on the first takeover, the first wrestling on the WWE network. So I'll be honest, I didn't see the match till about a year later. But it's just brilliant. And, you know, it could stack up with pretty much any takeover match now. NXT in 2014 really did well with picking some of the guys who weren't being used on the main roster and then putting them back in NXT for either a short time or a 6-month period. Cesaro and Tyson Kidd are probably the two best examples of that. Excellent pick.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So, Rory, number 57.
Indeed. Eddie Guerrero versus Edge in a no DQ match from SmackDown, September 26, 2002.
I had that one in the previous episode.
I've not got that one, so go for it, boys.
Let's have a natter about it. Yeah, this is one of those where you give extra credit to the two people involved for knowing what went wrong. And in the two previous encounters, Edge talks about this on the Eddie Viva La Raza DVD, actually. He says they had two good matches on pay-per-view before this, and he's right, but both times they were disappointed with them. They knew they could do better. And by all accounts, they effectively requested to have this match on SmackDown, I think you'll find. And they were granted 25 minutes at the end of the show. And boy, did they, in a very literal sense, you could say, bring the house down. They brought a lot of very big things down. Some of the bumps in this one, mega, mega super duper, but I think super duper, don't I? Super duper bumps. The biggest, oh yes, stitch that one, Jimmy, finish you will ever see. Nobody is kicking out of that one through the table, up a ladder, whatever it was. And they just went for it. And it wasn't gratuitous ultra violence. It wasn't as if they thought, oh, we've had two straight matches, let's bring the weapons now. It felt to me watching it, okay, we've had two good matches. I know a way we can finally have the great one our talents deserve. Let's bring all the plunder, baby. And they did, and it was a match which has cropped up in a few people's lists, I'm very pleased to say, but it's number 57 on mine. Callum.
First thing I want to say is plunder. What a fucking great word that is. That is, on the week of hard times, bringing out some plunder today.
Plunder.
I've been practicing my Dusty Rhodes impression. That one wasn't as good. So moving swiftly back on to the match, it was great. This is 2002 SmackDown at its very best.
Yeah.
When you could put Heyman, obviously, everyone talks about the SmackDown stuff. You could put any of them, any combination of the guys in the ring, and they'd have a great match. Add in all the wee added extras. The referee took a fucking ladder bump.
Yes.
Which was. I remember watching that and thinking it was one of the most shocking and also one of the most hilarious things I'd ever seen in my life. But as you said, Rory, there was nothing gratuitous. It was two guys who didn't like each other, couldn't get the better of each other on pay-per-view, so they'll just have one last big blow-off to say, we're finishing this once and for all. And they absolutely delivered.
It's a thing they do a lot, that they have the main feud, WWE, but the main feud between 2, 3, 4 matches takes place on pay-per-view. Then they have more of a postscript match on TV before moving on to the next feud. But this was actually the proper blow-off. It was pay-per-view quality in every way, I say.
Absolutely.
I think I'd be remiss as well not to mention Michael Cole's after-match commentary, where they'd obviously tacked it on after the match. If you might not remember this, boys, but it was right around the time when SmackDown was going to Thursday night, so they were like trying to make it. You kept saying stuff like, "This is must-see TV," and "Oh, you could make your friends watch this if you want." It was like, Michael, stop it. There's a fucking great match. There's a fucking great match going on here. You don't need to do it. You know, I'm sure there must be like a Tory Dawn Marie match that needs, you can pipe this into. We don't need to do this here.
Just too early for that.
This was also, I think, it solidified both of the guys, probably, certainly Edge as a player as well. But some of the moves in it, you probably think, you know, a career of that, you're probably going to finish early, and unfortunately, it almost came true. Did he not come back recently? Royal Rumble 2020, Ben and
Chance. We are recording this after Royal Rumble 2020, everybody. Because you might have worked that out early. Which Dawn Marie Tory match have you got next?
I've got the Royal Rumble 2003 or whatever it was.
The one that Dawn Marie comes out in a black veil. That was very beautiful. After she shagged her opponent's father to death.
Can I just say, we just talked about the SmackDown 6, and now we're talking about the Tory Dawn Marie thing, booked by the same person.
Tory and Dawn Marie, the SmackDown 4.
Hey!
There we go.
Beyond help, aren't we? Ben, number 6.
We've got to do it here because somebody's trying to ban laddish banter in the office.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk. We're not allowed to talk football in the office anymore. No. So, you know, we've got to do it here.
This is why we get derailed. 56, Ben.
56 from TLC. Oh, no, sorry. Start again, boys. Sorry. 56 from Unforgiven 2006. It is the TLC match for the WWF title between John Cena and Edge.
Nicely preempted. That one's coming a bit later.
Not on mine.
Okay.
My 56 is from Battleground 2014. It is the Usos versus Harper and Rowan in a best of three falls match.
Oh, wow. Very much not on mine. Wow.
Not on mine at all. I don't even remember that match.
No. Me neither, I must say.
It was fantastic. This is one of the, again, this is one of my sit up and take notice matches about for the Usos. At this point, they were, I remember the Usos coming in, and Tamina was like hitting splashes, and she was their heavy, she was the bodyguard. Nothing in between, and then they won the tag titles, and they started having good matches with everybody. Battleground 2014. I cannot remember why we chose this match, why we chose this pay-per-view, but me and my pals all went out to somebody's house and watched it. I can't remember what the main event was. I can't remember anything else that happened. There must have been a reason why we stayed up to watch it. This opened the show, I believe. I don't think it was the pre-show. I think it opened the show. And I thought it was an absolutely fantastic match. But the sounds of things, it might be slightly too high at 56. But nonetheless, it was a fantastic match. All four guys brought it for however long they were in. I think it went quite reasonably long for a 2014 tag title match.
1850 to be precise.
There you go. So almost 20 minutes for a tag title match was almost unheard of at that time. But it was brilliant. I would recommend it to anybody. It was a great match.
Gonna have to check. I have no recollection of this pay per view at all. Cena defeated Kane, Orton, and Roman in the main event. Nope.
No.
I remember that. That wouldn't have been the reason why we stayed up for it, surely. Because that's
Jericho
old.
Bray.
No, Miz must
winning
have
been a battle royal for the IC title. AJ Lee versus Paige. Rusev.
Oh, there
Jack
you go.
There's
the one.
Seth defeating Dean Ambrose by forfeit. Nope. You've got me on this one.
We must have stayed up. Well, this was when Roman wasn't insufferable.
We all off uni or not at work the next day or something.
No, July. So it was a Sunday. So I must have taken the day off after that for this.
For battle.
Oh, on a slight side note, because I heard the name mentioned, did everybody else have the same reaction when Tamina came out at the Rumble? Like, oh yeah, she still works here. Oh yeah.
I actually put this. I put this on Twitter. She could be on every show, every segment, every day, every week, every life, and I would still say she still works it every time she walks down. it's Pavlovian.
See when she first came out, I saw a picture of Nia Jax. Now they look nothing alike. I'll put this out there, they look nothing alike. But I saw Nia Jax with similar hair than that, and I was waiting on Nia Jax coming out for my prediction for a surprise. And I went mental when she came out. Everyone was looking at me as if I was a weirdo. And they were close out, because it's only
is that video with Autumn? Because she has a bit of a perm thing going on there. So I see what the one you mean.
So I just saw the perm. Then I saw the sort of the rest of it, and I'm thinking, fuck, that's not Nia. And I apologise now to Nate Milton for confusing his bae with Tamina Snuka. Sorry, Nate. Looking through this card, I see no redeemable features of this whatsoever. I don't know why I stayed up to watch it.
You literally must have all had the day off just for a day off, I think. That's.
I'm actually going to watch this pay-per-view this weekend, everybody. So by the time you are listening to this podcast, I will be watching Battleground 2014. And look at
July live watch is coming, boys.
I refuse to believe this one happened. But yeah, a fine pick of one I will definitely check out, my friend.
Stop after the first match, because after that, it's all downhill.
AJ Lee is the match after that. Okay, yeah. I'll turn off my phone now. Number 56 then, and I know this is on somebody else's list. Neither of your twos, I don't think. Maybe you'll prove me wrong. And that is Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson. I'm mishandling the big Johnson. There we go. And Psychosis versus Vader, Owen Hart, and British Bulldog from International Incident 96.
Not on mine.
It's on Scott Criscolo's though, isn't it? And it's on mine as well. See?
Scott, oh, get you two be besties.
Yeah. Scott and Rory sitting in a tree.
Yeah, but Triple H is... No, I'm not going to continue that. Ponder upon that while I tell you about this particular match. Yes, a perfect setting for a perfect setting, i.e. somewhere in Vancouver I've never heard of before, for a B-level pay-per-view main event. You've got five relatively... supposed to be six. We all know this is supposed to be Warrior in here. And it, for 27 minutes, it is literally all action. Much like the Survivor Series 87 match I mentioned on our previous show. There's no resting here whatsoever. No laurel resting or any hold resting. It's move for 27 minutes. The reason this match gets as high as it does, we talked about it last month, the importance of crowds. Is the crowd treating Sid as if he is the world's greatest living human being? Okay, he is the world's greatest living human being. Still staggering. Even Survivor Series 96 doesn't come close to the pop he received here. Father. I think this is where the Bizarro World thing really began, and this is one of the examples of it I'm very happy to see and relive. Yeah, tremendous matchup. Great finish. This is how you build towards a big pay-per-view. Big heel beating face champion as cleanly as you're going to get the month before. An A-level grade pay-per-view. So, yes, I told you to watch this, and did Scott Criscolo. What more do you need? To watch the main event of International Incident 1996. And did I tell you Scott had this in his list as well? I did have it 43 places higher.
But also, the best thing in the build-up was, well, Sid coming back was when they pan up, and there's this big guy with a permed mullet. But also, the attempted vehicular homicide. Oh, right before.
Yes.
That is amazing.
He could have killed somebody, McMahon.
That's why Psycho's... I mean, the most baffling guy in the world. He, for every reason, you should not enjoy stuff, but he's mesmerizing. What a guy.
Gone. He's the best worst wrestler there will ever be.
He really is.
Just, he's just got like a magnetism about him, hasn't he? You know, it's like, you know he's shit, but you don't care because he's gonna powerbomb a bitch, and that's all I want to see him do.
But even with stuff like, oh, we're live, pal. It's like, don't, like, that is perfect. That is just said. He knew they were live, and just thought, you know what? Who's gonna stop me? What a guy.
Oh, yeah, and 55.
We're on to 55, yes.
We are intrigued.
55 is the main event from WrestleMania 19, the WWE title match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar.
A good pick, which I will talk to you about later on.
Okie doke. My 55 is the second match from the first War Games. It is the War Games between Undisputed Era, Sanity, and AOP and Roderick Strong.
Not on mine.
And it's not on Woody's, obviously. I keep waiting for you to go, Jason, I'm going, nah, it's not on mine.
There's no shocking swerve on this one.
It's nice of you to leave the gap, though. I say leave the gap.
just in case he wants to shock us. Shock the system. Oh, there we go.
Oh, baby. Oh,
yeah, I get that one. Okay, let's go.
And that's only because you had a cheeky NXT match on your list.
You've got one. Main roster.
So I think this one, more than anything, gets on my list because it was the first. It has something about it because it was the first WWE War Games. It was a good match as well. So you see like the Undisputed Era at this point. So they've now been in War Games every year for the last 3 years. They're sort of the anchors of the... Anchors, is that word again?
Anchors.
Of NXT. I'm always a sucker as well for a makeshift team coming out dressed the same. So when Roderick Strong comes out dressed like the AOP, thumbs up for that one as well. Sanity before they went downhill. It was just this was when those Sanity and AOP were at their peak. Obviously, when they were in NXT, they went up just after WrestleMania and tanked. But I think it was a good match. Alexander Wolf has a knack for getting nasty injuries in big matches. He goes through a table and you can almost see his brain after it. It was disgusting. The cut he gets in his head, but it was just chaos. I wasn't a big fan of it going 3 vs 3 vs 3, but I think they made it work in the end. It was just magical. Because you even had bits where they were going for the Tower of Doom spot, and Adam Cole was still sitting on both the turnbuckles, and he just gets everyone is fucked basically, and you've got Adam Cole just basking. And the applause as he's the only one left standing. It was fantastic.
I like the match. The reason it's probably not for me, I'm not a fan of the 3 vs 3 vs 3. It's much better 4v4. But again, like you say, I'm like you, I love when just they all dress the same, like do the Undisputed Era in it for the last War Games match. Yeah, you know, a bit of togetherness. It's a good thing. But it is a good match. I'm just not a fan of the 3 vs 3 vs 3. I think that just took it out for me a bit, if I'm honest.
Yeah, when they were all coming out as a team as well. So I can't remember. Did they have 3 guys starting and then every 5 minutes the rest of their team came out? Is that how it worked? I can't. I've just completely blanked on it.
I think that might be right, you know. I think that might be right.
Strange concept, but I think they might have wanted to WWE-ify it. But then
almost like Vince was like, oh yeah, you can have this match, Hunter, if you want, but you've got to have these rules.
Yeah. But I'll always remember as well William Regal coming out to announce it. And it was just the way it goes. There's only one way that I know that we can settle this.
Yeah.
Two rings. Two rings, one cage, war games. Oh, one steel cage, two rings, war games. Oh, excellent. The first countdown, O'Reilly and Fish entered assisting Cole. The second countdown, Akam and Reza. I don't know how to say those names. AOP, come on. So they did all come in.
Akam and Reza, Occam's razors. You know, are you not educated, man?
You stupid.
Oh! it's one of these things like Paul Bearer's name only clicked onto me a couple of years ago.
Oh, my God.
I know. There is more that clicked onto me, that clicked on far later than I care to admit. But that's the big one.
We might turn that into a segment. Shh. Save it.
What am I doing here? Telling you my number 55, everybody. That's what I'm doing. And it's Randy Savage versus Ric Flair for the WWF title from WrestleMania 8.
Hiya.
Not on, mate.
Ooh, two very interesting comments there. 54, Ben.
54 is from Battleground 2013, and it is a tag match between Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Goldust.
I do at least remember the existence of this one, but it's not on my list.
Oh, that's one up. Callum? Have we lost Callum?
Callum.
Sorry, I was on mute there.
On mute in shame after admitting you didn't know what Paul Bearer is.
Oh, I was unmuted for that as well.
Oh, you heard that one, baby.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir.
Sorry, yes, I have this one on my list, but it was lower. We talked, I mentioned that the last time.
Okay, so I personally think this is probably, that is Vince double negative, ahoy. This is, for me, the finest example of a Southern style wrestling match in the WWE. And you can tell Dusty and Dustin have put it all together. The other three, I'm sure, will have had some input, but it has got their three fingerprints all over it.
I think the other three might have had their input and they were probably swiftly ignored.
Yes. Yes.
When you've got Dusty and you've got Dustin, who's one of the best tag wrestlers ever, as we talked about the last time, you just sit back and let them do what they do. It was a fantastic match. It was,
yeah.
It's one of these times that, again, I don't want to go all JR on this, but as you get older, and you sometimes well, maybe it's just me, emotionally invested in stuff as much, or you can see through some of the plainly obvious, here it comes, shite. this match had everything going for it. Then yeah. you had Dusty, you had the brothers going at it. This was for their jobs, was it not?
Yes.
So you had all that. You had the Shield, who were unstoppable. You had the Authority. It was just excellent.
Even if you ignore the in-ring work for a bit, if you know enough of the backstory of the Rhodes family, you know, you sort of just, you know, it all started really at Dusty's Hall of Fame speech induction, isn't it? And this is sort of 5-6 years later, but you know this is a dysfunctional family and they have come together, like you say, just to keep everybody's jobs going. You know, the Shield make Dusty into a threat. You know, this is only a couple of years before the man passed away, and they are still making him look like the biggest shit kicker in the world.
It's because he doesn't care. He'll just do what he needs to do. He's a fighter.
Best for business, baby.
Yeah. So it was time that the Shield and the Authority had some hard times put on them, and Dusty was the guy to do it.
Yeah.
Excellent. It was excellent. Absolutely excellent. It also comes in the back of what was on my list previously in the Goldust return. It was all that whole story.
Yeah.
How Cody should have gone on for there. And this never quite happened for the guy, for one reason or another. But that was excellent stuff in that match.
It didn't turn out too badly for Cody in the end, though, did it? I doubt he's too disappointed now, undesirable or not.
Allegedly. Yeah, undesirable.
Mate. Let's do number 54 from my list then, shall we? And that is Owen Hart versus 123 Kid from King of the Ring 94.
I have got that one coming up very soon indeed.
Not on mine.
Okay, we'll talk about it then.
Did I do my 54?
I was about to say, you skipped over it. Yeah, we're one each now.
We're all doing it. So my number 54 is Mr. Perfect versus Ric Flair for the... Start again, Callum. So my number 54 is Mr. Perfect versus Ric Flair and the loser leaves the WWF match from Monday Night Raw from the 25th of January, 1993.
Nice pick. Not on mine, but a very, yes. very nice pick.
Yeah, good pick. Not on mine.
This one I watched, I've always heard about it, and I wanted to try and watch Raw from the very start, and the first couple are pretty bland. I wouldn't say poor, there's just not a lot on them, they were just there. But then this match had sort of kicked on what will Raw would have become, which is their main show. Everything's going to happen on Raw. It was a fantastic match to boot. You had Bobby on commentary, who again just does what Bobby does. It was two guys who were going out. Flair obviously wanted to do the right thing for Mr. Perfect, who was, I think, he'd not long come back. Oh, it would have been the Survivor Series he came back.
Yes.
And it showed you that Mr. Perfect was still as good as ever after the back injury. Flair is just Ric Flair. And it was a great TV match for the time, because you didn't get very many star versus star matches, even on Raw at the time, even though it was just starting. So I think it was perfect for what it did, so to speak. And it was a great match as well.
Yeah, really good, yeah. Really good pick.
Three things. One, great match. Two, glad that you mentioned Bobby's commentary. Behind the Rumble 92 is probably my favourite Bobby commentary. And number three, how can you say Raw in the beginning was bland when Rob Bartlett's sitting right there at commentary?
God. He's got an ass like an amphitheatre.
I would rather have Art Donovan on commentary every week on Monday Night Raw than Rob Bartlett.
See, now I wish that would have been a perfect segue for my number 54, but I've already given it away now.
Okay, so number 53 for me from SummerSlam night. I'll start again, boys. Number 53 from me from SummerSlam 2002. It is the unsanctioned street fight between Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
A bit later for me.
Yep, same for you.
You're 53, Callum.
My 53, again, I've lost it again. My goodness, my technology's failing me tonight. I should have remembered this because it was something that we've just talked about. Art Donovan's Finest Hour, it's Owen Hart versus the 123 Kid from King of the Ring 1994.
Ah, perfect. I'll let you go first as I interrupted you last time.
Not a problem. I don't know what it's... There's not much you can really say about this one other than it is probably the greatest short match that they've had in company history. It was two guys that went out. It was Owen's big night, obviously. You're in with Waltman, who can go with anyone. He was the yardstick, as they said, about if you can't have a good match with Sean Waltman, you can't have a good match with anybody. Owen Hart can have a good match with anybody. You put two guys like that in, and you're going to get a great match, regardless of how long they give them. So it was just fantastic from start to finish, even though start and finishing was quite close together.
The short gap between saying the word start and saying the word finish. It was fantastic between that. Yeah, this was a very hard match for me to rank. It's one of those where when the project was first mooted at the end of February last year, and I gathered together about 20 or 30 matches in my head, brainstormed them straight up. Straight off the bat, this was one of them. It's probably just looking at my list, the lowest or at best second lowest placed of those. I think just missing out on the top 50 is, in all good conscience, the highest I can possibly place it, because it is only 3 minutes 50 seconds. But yeah, let's face it, what a great 3 minutes 50 seconds. I'm not normally one for fan fiction, but I like to think that they got wind in the back that the match after this between the Head Shrinkers and Crush and Yoko was going to be given nearly 10 minutes. We'll fucking show them. Because it would have, let's face it, Head Shrinkers versus Crush and Yoko could easily have followed it if they really hadn't put their minds to it, Owen and the kid. Everything, just right from the first millisecond where Owen wipes kid out through the... wipes him out through the ropes when the kid's staggering down with his neck injury. And then it's just bang, 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 bang. Lightning fast counters you didn't see. Power bombs straight out of Korakuen Hall. And great finish. Even Art Donovan, I think, sort of wanted to have an appreciation for pro wrestling after this one. I think it's the one match he actually stays quiet during, and that should speak volumes. I would give my 54. And yes, he does look like a boxer. I'll give him that.
So
Ben, just quickly, not on your list, that match?
Not on my list, no. Do love it, though. Do love it. So I'm going to... it's not one of them I'm going to argue with you for, because, like you say, I think probably the only serious contender it's got in that great short match category is probably Brock Goldberg from WrestleMania, yeah, if I'm honest.
Or Drew Brock from WrestleMania this year after he tanks him.
Pronouns, pronouns.
After Drew tanks him.
Yeah. okay. So where are we? Yes, I'm 53 now, isn't it? Yes.
50, yeah. You're 53 or is it my 52? Sorry,
my 53.
Go for it.
That is the first of two matches between these two. Don't think you'll be hearing that on many more people's other lists. That is Bob Backlund versus Bret Hart for the WWF title, Superstars, July 94.
Wow.
Whoa, that's a good choice. But it's not on my list.
No.
Shocking. The second of two matches on my top 100, where you cannot find it, at least at time of recording, on the network. No, I didn't have to dip into the murky world of Daily Motion for this one. One of those things called DVDs helped me out on this one. Remember that? DVDs?
Bloody hell.
Digital versatile discs.
I love that it stands for fucking versatile and not video like everybody thought. I actually watched it. This match is on, for those who want to check it out. It's on the 50 greatest finishing moves set. And also, yes, and also, yes, right, Drew right, McIntyre right, is one of the talking heads during it.
All right, Scott, calm down.
Oh, that's it now. We're like that. We're like that. Yeah. My sort of match, and you won't see anything like this. And it's felt like, again, I'll be saying this in about 10 matches time, it's felt like a throwback for July 1994, let alone me talking about it in January 2020. It's so, so old school, and it's not for everybody. It's a TV match at the end of a taping in front of the proverbial one man and his dog. Even if you take out the brilliant turn at the end of it, it's such a treat to just be able to watch a match like this that could have taken place at any point from 1994 backwards in the previous 50 years. Yet it does have a modern twist. And it's another one, much like the Bret B. Kidd match I talked about last time. You can tell that the commentary team here, it's JR and King, really appreciate what's before them. And sometimes we probably do make a bit too much of commentary, but it does add just that little bit of sparkle to what is just a lovely match. I think lovely is the right word. It's one of those you can tell Bret just adored this kind of thing. And look what it did for Backlund, something else we'll talk about maybe again today if we're very lucky. Yes, Backlund versus Bret Hart in just a... again, I'm saying, treat of a match buried on Superstars at the end of July in 1994. Find it if you can.
Good stuff. I think it's probably the forgotten one. And unfortunately, people remember Roddy Piper being an absolute nuisance with a microphone instead.
What do you say?
Be a quick you say.
You're applying an arm lock. What do you say?
I was going to say I have nothing bad to say about my countrymen, but that's not strictly true. It was awful. You can say whatever you like.
He'll redeem himself a bit later on in my list anyway. Ben, now it is time for your
52.
Okay, so I'm definitely going to be the low vote on this one. So it is Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from Survivor Series 96.
Wow. We'll get that one higher.
Yeah, thought so.
Don't even need to waste my breath on that one. Of course it's fucking higher. Callum, surprise us now. You're 52, maybe.
My 52 is a first ever ladder match. It's Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys from No Mercy 1999.
I've already mentioned it.
And I will mention it later.
There we go.
So my...
Rory.
Yes, my 52. One of those I'll be, again, fascinated to see where this one comes in the composite list. It's Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle for the WWE title from WrestleMania 20.
Not on my list.
No, great match, but not on mine.
Ah, yeah, this... Another one. An easy pick when it came into my head. Although it's actually jumped up a bit from my first, when I first put down my top 100 about 2 or 3 weeks before submitting, this one was around about the 70 mark. And I watched it again, hoping to like it a bit more. And I'm pleased to say I did. I was watching it very, very closely. It was probably a little unfair that I paid this one such attention. I still couldn't quite get it into my top 50, but jumping about 25 more spots, I was happy enough with that. Yeah, I wonder why this one doesn't seem to be quite as fondly remembered as you think it might be. Is it because all the Eddie emotion was wrung out the previous month? Do some people find the finish a little silly from a physics perspective? They're probably right to do so. If you're taking off the boot, it's not necessarily because... Anyway, I'm not a chiropodist. I'm a wrestling fan, so I'm going to let it go. You could be... Hey, if any chiropodist wrestling fans up, thank you for joining. But it's... Yeah. Something I like in my WrestleMania main events, and yes, it wasn't the main event, but come on, it's a title match at WrestleMania. Felt like a big deal without artificially being made to be a big deal.
Yeah.
It felt like a great WWE title match as opposed to a WWE great title match. You see the difference, you know what I mean?
I follow you.
They're letting Eddie and Kurt fucking wrestle. I said it, wrestle with an R for 25 minutes at MSG in 2004. And this was the result. Not number 77, number 52, Eddie Guerrero, WrestleMania 20.
Two things. One, great match. I love the finish. I'm not a chiropodist either, but I love that finish. And two, the debut as well of probably the greatest T-shirt in wrestling history that isn't an NWO or Austin shirt in Eddie's Scarface shirt.
Oh, yes. That is super. It's a beaut. It's a beaut.
You know, it was one of them. I was like, you know, when you just see something straight away and you just, nope, I need to buy that. There was like, no ifs or buts. It's like, yeah.
It's so good that I think it's still even in the games that they bring out so you can make the T-shirt again. It's that good. No, it was underappreciated great pick there, Rory, I think.
I wonder if, just briefly, it doesn't quite get the love I think it deserves because it was an Eddie Guerrero title defence. And again, after what happened the month before, no, nothing's coming close to that in terms of...
No, but it's...
On a very long show as well, especially for the time period, 4 hours 30, I think it is, it clocks in as on the DVD. Yes, that again.
Yes, the good old digital versatile disc. Is it because people don't want to watch WrestleMania 20 for obvious reasons?
Yeah, that could have something to do with it,
Just because, as you say, it's an Eddie Guerrero title defence where it was all the peak... was no way out the month before. It is sorely underappreciated. But no, well deserving of being on your list, on somebody's list. Good choice. So we are on to number 51.
Right. Excellent.
The last like Mark match is almost up to 4.5 hours of total.
lives.
We'll be right. We'll be all right. Come on. We'll fight through.
Let's do it.
51. Because I
get the kettle. I think, make the coffees.
I think one of you at least will have this match higher, and it is for the European Championship from Monday Night Raw of March 97 between the British Bulldog and Owen Hart.
We'll be talking about that one. Not yet, though.
There we go.
Okay, so my 51 from WrestleMania 31. It is the WWE title match between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, open bracket, and Seth Rollins, close bracket.
No.
Yeah, not on my list.
Weird one. I didn't really like it at the time. I think that was because of the impending doom, which I saw at the time. Because this is peak Roman, go away, please. I've grown out of that now, but it was 5 years ago. I was slightly more immature. I like it more because of what happened, and ironically, I'll probably like it less if I watch it again, because it's now Seth that's winning, and he's just really, really annoying just now. I think was it Peter that said he's now retrospectively hating all Seth Rollins matches because he's just an asshole. I'm getting that way myself. But it was just, there's something to be said for two big guys just going out and knocking lumps out each other. You have Suplex City, bitch. He throws him around like a ragdoll. Roman comes back and gives his own back. And then you've got the cash in, which at the time was shocking because you never had somebody cash in during a match. It was something new. You don't always get new and like variety and Money in the Bank cash in. So that was good, and it was just again. I think it's an underappreciated match because of who's in it. Because Roman at the time was public enemy number one. Brock was Brock. He turns up, does his stuff, whatever. But it was a better match than the two should have put on. Brock must have been really, really up for it that night.
Good match. Yeah, I haven't watched 31 since it happened. I did watch 31 live. It was the last main year I did watch live in the moment. I think at the time, I was probably a bit jaded again, very late in the day or early in the morning here in the UK watching it. I was there watching it on my Kindle. Oh, yes. Said to myself, why is Roman smiling after being hit with a move? I was still asking myself that question 15 minutes later when the show had gone off the air. I probably need to revisit it, to be honest with you.
Honestly, the only thing I can actually remember of that match is Suplex City, bitch. That is,
yeah.
You know, that is literally the only memorable thing. I am not anti-Roman in terms of that, but I am like, I would just like him just to politely just go away from that main event, but it's never going to happen, and we're just going to have to roll with it now.
I would have another look, but just, I wouldn't say look at it with 2015 eyes if you're a bit sick of Rome at the time. Certainly don't look at it with 2020 eyes. With Seth.
Are you sick of everybody involved?
Probably. 2018 is probably the sweet spot. Look at it with 2018 eyes and you're probably fine. So, Rory, you're number 51.
Rounding off my first 50% of selections, so for fuck's sake. It's a match we have talked about, so we can discuss it now. John Cena versus Edge, TLC match for the title at Unforgiven 06.
I mentioned it a bit earlier.
What have you got it at?
I think I had it at, let's have a look, 56. So okay. Not too far apart.
Kick us off with it.
It was a great... That was a great little two-match series between the two of them at that point. You know, it was always like the they were both playing an away game, weren't they? You know, Edge won the title in Boston. Cena's trying to win the title in Toronto. In Edge's, you know, signature match. This is, I think, my highest Edge singles match. I've got a couple of tag matches coming up later. But I just think it's great. Lita gets involved, but not massively. It's just the two of them. I would say, I personally think Edge is Cena's best opponent. I know the company try and steer you towards Orton, and I'm not forgetting Punk, don't worry. But in terms of that, you know, that Batman Joker dynamic, I always go with Edge on that. And I'm not the biggest Edge guy, to be fair.
Yeah, that Batman Joker comparison, it holds. I think it's one they were probably actively going for. Probably trying to ram them into those roles.
Yeah,
I don't think they necessarily fit entirely snugly, but they got away with it. It's one of those where I didn't really love the feud between these. It's just something they kept going back to throughout the year. It never really seemed to be about anything. And I know when you've got the title involved, that should be the most important thing, and I can see that it should be, but it didn't really seem to be a whole lot else. And Edge was pulling Cena through it.
They just hammered in that whole bit with Cena's dad, didn't they?
I didn't like any of that.
Yeah, I didn't like any of that.
And then went there again a few years later, and that didn't work either. But hey, if you take the feud out of it and you just look in ring, it's another one where they knew what they could do, they knew what they couldn't do, and they laid thick in over 20 minutes of all the stuff they could do. I think this is where it really begins for Cena, in my opinion. It showed he could do stuff and do stuff extremely well.
I think it started with Cena in terms of his calling matches. I think I said it in the last podcast with the RVD match that's when I first noticed it, because before then he was always in the ring with guys like Shawn or Hunter who could, you know, hold his hand basically.
Cena is not being carried in this match.
No,
and there's another one. I know One Night Stand is the one we all talk about, and understandably, and the way he deals with the crowd reaction here, I think, is masterful.
Yeah,
the almost apologetic way he wins at the end.
Yeah,
and I suppose you could say he should be apologetic, because when he FUs, as it still was then, when he FU'd Edge through the table, he legitimately knocked him loopy, but we'll overlook that. And Cena's just like, oh, okay, here I am at the top of the ladder. Everyone's booing me. Might as well take the belt down. I'm standing here, aren't I?
And he doesn't even look at the crowd, does he? When he's taking the title out, he's just going straight to the back. He does his little pose at the end and on the ramp, on the ring entrance. But that's it. There's no acknowledgement of the crowd. It's like, yeah, I've got the title. I've won. See you later.
Once more, very clever use of the spot.
Yeah.
Everything's at the right time for the right purpose.
There's a stack of tables. We know it's there. We know it's there. Just keep it in your brain. We're going to be using it in a bit.
Chekhov's gun for you, ladies and gents. Yes, that's my number 51, Cena the Edge, Unforgiven 06.
Lovely. So that's us, boys. We have finally made it to halfway. After about 4 hours, we've made it halfway. So, I think we keep the momentum going.
Let's go for it.
For your number 50, Ben.
Yep.
My number 50 from In Your House 5, from another 1995 match, Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog for the WWF title.
Higher in my list?
Not on mine at all.
Okay.
I've got a funny feeling we won't be talking about this one just now. My number 50 is the Royal Rumble match from Royal Rumble 1992.
Wow.
Number 50?
Number 50. Do you know why? Do you know why? Because it's not as good as the Royal Rumble in 2020.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Rory, you know what this needs?
Nothing's going to... That was lightning in a bottle at number 100.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody. Expect us to be discussing the Royal Rumble 92 main event a little later on. Okay.
Yeah. It's coming.
And here's one we've mentioned in the last three shows. I'll be very brief on it. My number 50. I know it's on your list. Ben, Punk versus Bryan from Open the Limit 2012.
Great match.
Yeah, we've already talked about it. Just want to say it is an excellent match. Should have main evented, but, you know, WWE in 2012 in it. It's CM Punk and Daniel Bryan having a wrestling match. Go back to our second show for a bit more on me from this one. Yeah, top stuff. My number 50.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
When you say it should have main evented, I'm looking at that time, May 2012. Did that get overlooked for Johnny Ace against John Cena in some way, shape, or form?
Of course.
Exactly. Remember, that was at the very beginning of John Cena's worst year of his life, where he was still main eventing every show.
Oh, for fuck's sake. It's the worst year of my life. I only made $50 million this year. No sympathy from me, pal. So, moving on. We're now in the top 50.
Almost there.
49.
The end is in sight.
69 minus 20. Listen to the last show for that.
Oh,
one.
No.
No, not that again. No.
Ben.
I knew it was too good to be true. I did.
Ben, just wait till the Royal Rumble next year. I'll still be talking about Drew winning. Did I tell you Drew McIntyre won the Royal Rumble this year?
Okay.
Ben, before Rory stops recording.
It's a match I have got on right now, and it is from No Mercy 2008. It's the ladder match between Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels.
A little bit later in mine.
I don't think I have it. I think I may have had this one previous. But it's not coming up. I
think you mentioned the 2003, the WrestleMania 19 and the Unsanctioned. I don't know if you've had this.
I did. You know my list better than me, Ben.
I just remember shit. That's all.
It's not on mine.
Okay.
So, my number 49 was a highly controversial match for the last one. It is from WrestleMania 17. Steve Austin versus The Rock for the WWF title. Controversial because somebody picked it really low.
Yes, he did.
And so somebody else has picked it really high.
So we can't do it yet. Okay.
You're rattling through these boys.
This one will put the cat among the pigeons a bit. 49. Royal Rumble match from 1990.
Not on mine.
Does it make my list?
The fourth of five Royal Rumble matches in my list. JT described this one far better than I could. What he's regularly referred to and talked about this one. One very simple C word, not that one, colours. It just looks like January 1990, doesn't it? When you're watching it, even if you're scrolling through the list of competitors on Wikipedia or something, everything about it screams January 1990. And I don't think there's anybody listening to this of any age or vintage who take a dislike January 1990 WWF. I mean, look at the people in this match. How the hell could you? It's the first Rumble, for my opinion, that really has three acts. It's loaded for the first 10. The story starts to unfold in the second act. We all know what begins act three, and Hogan wins at the end, but, you know, never mind. One thing I want to mention about the Hogan Warrior stare down. Who stays to watch it? Bobby Heenan stays too long to watch it. And very understandably underlooked quality moments. Stare down. Because even he knows this is bigger than anything else. And it seems like it. I wanted to pick something because, let's face it, everyone's talked about that stare down a million times, and rightly so. I just want to bring it up. Yes, Callum.
I don't know if it's underlooked or anything, but the one thing that I always get from the stare down is Tony Schiavone's call of it.
Oh, glory.
They turn round, he just lets it breathe, you hear the crowd, everyone's on their feet, and he just goes, there is not a person sitting down.
Yeah, magnificent call.
It's one of his best.
it's a great commentary call from Tony and Jesse all through otherwise. That line is brilliant, but the whole show is Tony and Jesse just sniping at each other. And you're like, go on, Tony, give it as good as you've got, mate. Go for it.
Tony was a very late call on commentary there. He didn't know he was going to be on mic duty until very late on, supposedly.
Mm-hmm. And you got Jesse with his Mickey Mouse stuff because it's in Orlando.
Yes.
Great sartorial choice.
Great commentary. Awful commentary can ruin something, but great commentary can make a great moment. It puts it over the top.
The thing is, with the stare down in the Rumble, they've almost tried it every year since, haven't they? And it's only worked once, which is the Austin Rock one in 2001. They do try it every year, and it's like when the crowd are just not biting at all and they'll still go for it, you know, looking at the sign, pointing to the sign, whatever. It's like, no, just carry on.
You can't replicate it, though, can you? You can't.
No.
No. Like I say, they've done it. They've managed it once in 30 years.
Not a bad return, right?
Well, it worked.
A slightly more prosaic point. One of the great things about Rumble 90, it's the first one in which some people get their entrance music other than numbers 1 and 2. Well, Marty and Jake get theirs.
How random.
They gave up after that.
We'll do Marty, we'll do Jake. Oh, who needs to hear real American?
Yeah, there you go. The Rumble match from 1990. A true sense of place for those 60 minutes there. Number 49 on my list.
Perfect. Number 48, Mr. Locke.
48 is from the King of the Ring 1993, the semi-final match between Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect.
Higher on my list.
Yep, coming up on mate.
Cracking.
So, I've harped on enough about, well, not enough, I will harp on continually, about a great British win at a major pay-per-view. My number 48 is exactly the same. It's the ultimate British victory. It is the Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog from SummerSlam 1992 at Rory's soon-to-be stomping ground, Wembley.
Thank you. Aston Villa through to the Carabao Cup final, everybody, for those who are wondering. At time of recording, we don't know who we're going to be playing, though.
Give me a sec. What time are we on?
By the time we finish, we probably will.
Yeah, in about 40 minutes we'll know, but not right now.
Oh, I think we could probably say it's Manchester.
Well, I think we can have it. Yes.
Let me have a look on. By the way, it's coming up higher for me. I'm going to look on BBC Sport now while I'm here.
I've got it here. Manchester United are winning 1-0. Oh, you must be hoping it's United.
I think I am.
Oh, doesn't that still? They've still got to get like two more goals. So
one goal to take it to extra time.
Yes. One.
Oh, 3-1, wasn't it? Yeah.
One of the first leg, yeah.
Because Manchester City came out and started to take the piss in the second half and let them score. Yes, anyway, my number 48, Bret Hart versus the Bulldog from Wembley, SummerSlam 1992.
Yeah, coming up higher. I think we've got the same high, middle, low going on here.
We all know what's happening here, don't we? Number 48 for me. Oh, yes, here we go. Sean and Diesel versus Razor and the Kid from Action Zone, October 94.
I have Was that one gonna... higher, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Excellent. Okay.
We'll talk about it then. You're 47, Benjamin.
Okay, so it's the first of two matches from these two gentlemen on my list. I know it's not going to be on Rory's. So it is from NXT TakeOver Chicago, Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano in the street fight.
Oh, the street fight. Let's have a look. The street fight is not on my list. Or it's not still to come. I can't remember if it was lower, but I don't think so.
Okay, so the reason I picked this match, the reason I love this match, it was, you know, 30, 35 minutes. Always like a street fight when the guys wear normal clothes. You know, we don't wear wrestling gear during the street fight. That's not the point of it. You've got the air raid through the table at the entranceway you know, by the side of the end, straight at the end of the match. That is great. I spoke in the last podcast about ripping the ring up, you know, Ciampa doing the DDT on Gargano on the pile of wood. It's just great. And again, you know, it was sort of, it should have been act two in a 3 or 4 match arc. Sadly, due to injury, we never got the true blow off to it. But yeah, their second best match, Ciampa Gargano from Chicago.
You can't really go wrong with it, with the two of them. We'll probably see them over and over again. Probably see all their matches together in the top 100, I would imagine. I think with that one, I didn't want to. I think a few people might have thought like this. I didn't want to put all three in because you've only got 100. You've only got 100 spots in it. This one was the one that I put in. I ranked least.
I just
dropped off.
I'm not as big a fan of the Brooklyn match only because it was sort of a substitute match. It should have been the triple threat with Aleister Black. And obviously it ended up just being a singles match. I say just in inverted commas, but compared to the other two matches previously, they had such a high bar to clear and they couldn't quite manage it.
It's difficult. It would be difficult to keep improving on it, but it was still in a vacuum, still a super match. So great choice. Can't argue with it at all.
And I'm still bitter that we never got the actual ending to the feud that we should have got. But hey ho, injuries happen.
At this point, it's doubtful we ever will, unfortunately. No. My number 47 is The Shield versus the Wyatt Family from Elimination Chamber 2014.
That one woke me up a bit. I had that one back at in number 74.
It was my 77.
Wow, so I had a well higher. I thought it would have been a little bit closer. I'll
get it out of the way then. I could talk a bit now. This is one of those. 2014, I was kind of mild on the product, and this was one of those, you have to go back and check out these matches type of things, and I did. I watched it with my Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast colleague, Mr. Dan Welling, specifically. And I ended up ranking it at number 74 as a result. The thing I really love about this match, it has six. I talked about the three acts of the Royal Rumble earlier. This match has six separate acts to it. Go back, watch it, try and tell me I'm wrong. Six separate acts. Each one follows on from the last story. I couldn't go higher than the mid-70s because I didn't really have much of an attachment to it. And I almost, one of those almost felt compelled to like. But luckily, I still did anyway.
Yeah. I didn't watch it live, so I'm in the same boat as Rory. I think I watched it a couple of years later. And you just, what impresses you actually is the way, okay, you know, 2020 eyes, they didn't quite manage it, but the way they tried to make six stars. You know, there was no, even though it was the Wyatt family, you know, there was no Bray overshadowing Rowan and Harper in this match. They were three equals in the match itself.
Yeah, and it's, if ever, like, start again, Callum, you can get your words out. The This Is Awesome chant was, as a cliche now, it was at the time, but this was well deserving of the This Is Awesome chant right at the start of the match. That original stare down was excellent.
The imaginary battle line in the middle, three guys either side of it.
The Shield came out first and they were in the ring, and then you obviously have the cracking entrance of the Wyatt family. So he's just rocking on his thing, and then they all got up in the apron, and the shot that they take from the crowd, when you see the six guys, it's behind the Shield. The Shield's getting back to the camera, and you just see them all, and the whole place is going mental. It was excellent. And then you get the Shield. They always, JBL always said, was it controlled chaos that the Shield were? That was just bodies everywhere. And the Wyatt family played into that perfectly. It was just It was just excellent.
Roman succumbs at the end as well. Remember that?
They were the days.
He was human.
Yeah, so I think we've covered everything on that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So 47, Rory.
47 for me. Michaels v Jericho, WrestleMania 19. Let's keep it simple.
Love it.
Where right, we got that
three
one?
For me. I've got that about in the 90s. I think I had that. Yeah, 90. I can't even remember. 94. Sorry. So,
you got that one, Callum?
I had that one lower. Yep. So fire away.
Let's talk about it. Yeah. This is one, the match we've just talked about, a lot of people said should have taken place at WrestleMania 30. I think a B pay-per-view was the right spot for it. And I think that match between the Wyatts and the Shield is more fondly remembered because of it. This is one where it's lifted by the fact it took place at WrestleMania. When I watch it purely in our old friend, The Vacuum, I do think it's missing something. It's from a pure work perspective, taking everything else out of the account. I would struggle to go above the 4-star mark with it, but this is one where you play in the feud, or you play in Jericho effectively being Shawn Michaels version 2, where you play in even things like that jagged entryway down to the ring at Safeco Field at WrestleMania 19. It all adds up to put this one as a must-have in my list. Even though I still think from a straight-up wrestling match at this point they were capable of better, I still couldn't really justifiably ask for more. Is 47 a touch too high for it, taking all of those things into consideration? Perhaps it is, but it's WrestleMania 19 in it, and we all love that anyway. So yes, my number 47. Not the last of their matches, but Michaels Jericho in my list. Michaels Jericho here from WrestleMania 19, safely in at 47.
And I think going back to some of that in the last podcast, it was that match where I think we all flicked up that light bulb and we realised that Shawn is coming back full time. It's not just going to be a one and done thing with Triple H. He's in for the long haul here.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at that point he did the match at SummerSlam and then he was off and then it was they shoehorned him into Survivor Series. Then he happened to win, so he had to then defend it. So you're still thinking he's not back full time. Then he enters the Royal Rumble. So you've got that sort of 5 months where you think this guy, he's going to stop eventually.
Yeah.
And then boom, that's him back.
Because it's a great match, and then there's that bit right at the end, isn't there, when they're embracing and then Jericho kicks him in the balls and you're thinking, there's going to be a rematch here.
I remember watching that again. So 2003, I was Butter Boy and you look at it, I'm like, oh, you bastard. but it was one of these things like what we're talking about, some of the matches on WrestleMania 17. It was one of the better matches on one of the best WrestleManias.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you've ranked it too high at all, Rory. It's one of these ones that you can't argue if it's somebody's top 25 or somebody's bottom 10. As long as it's on, it's just deserving of being on a list somewhere.
Yeah, I couldn't not rank it. I really couldn't.
No, definitely.
Just inside the top 50. No, I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Perfect stuff. So, number 46, Ben.
46 from NXT TakeOver Dallas. It is Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn.
Oh, I know this one.
Oh, I've had this one.
that's all you're getting.
I know it too. It's been on my list already, so fire away, Ben.
All right, I'll be honest, and this might be my Paul Bearer moment for, like Callum had earlier on. I don't watch much Japanese wrestling, so I had never seen Nakamura wrestle until this match. And I can say that. I've said it out loud now. There we go. And I just think for an introduction for a man to a new audience, I just think it's a perfect match with a perfect opponent. It was Sammy's last match in NXT. And he went out on an absolute high.
Oh, he couldn't have gone out on a much higher. I am with you, Ben. I've never seen Shinsuke Nakamura wrestle before this one. I knew of him, and I knew that it was a big deal that he was coming in, and he signed the contract. He was leaving New Japan.
I knew the name.
You knew it was a big deal, and it's one of these. It's one of these that it's a must see just because of who he is. And for me, there was the must be for yourself as well. The mystique of never seen this guy and seen how good he is, and my God, did we find out how good he was?
It's one of those few matches where that, you know, smart mark crowd chant of fight forever is one you agree with. You know, you could quite happily just watch them two just beat the shit out of each other.
Oh, easily. I remember thinking that this was before Sammy's WrestleMania debut in the ladder match.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking he's not going to make it to that ladder match. I genuinely thought he was going to get concussed or he was going to pop a shoulder or do his knee or something. I genuinely didn't think he was going to make it because it was just so... It was the strongest thing.
Yeah. And, you know, going to a point that we made earlier on about a match, about good commentary, a guy who now gets, quite rightly, ripped into. Great commentary from Corey Graves, making Nakamura, to people like myself, a big deal straight away.
NXT Corey Graves was great.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, the guy knows his stuff and is a good commentator when he's commentating. When he's not shouting over people, or when he starts to shout over people and just becomes a modern day Matt Striker, that's where it all goes wrong.
Modern day Matt Striker. Oof.
Cutting.
We all felt that one.
I hope Corey knows that as well. excellent pick. My 46 is another best 2 out of 3 falls match. This time it is Demolition versus the Hart Foundation from SummerSlam 1990.
Wow. Ooh.
I take it it's not on either of your lists.
You want to...
You catch on fast, don't you? Yeah. Hey, fantastic. Hey, it's SummerSlam 90. Who doesn't love that? So, hit it.
I was trying to think of a witty comeback there, but it's gone. I was trying to think of a witty Drew McIntyre style, like, shoehorn. But I'll just leave the Royal Rumble 2020 winner alone at this time. So, Demolition versus the Hart Foundation. It's Demolition, like, in 1990, shouldn't be having good matches. Axe is whatever his fish allergy injury caused him. He's got a heart condition. Crush is part of Demolition at this point in time. Man has never been good. God rest his soul, but he was completely shite in the ring.
Shite.
It was peak Hart Foundation as well. As much as like a team can have many peaks, because this was after failed Bret Hart push number one, and just before successful Bret Hart push number one. It was just a great match. The crowd as well. I'll always rank a match higher if it's got a hot crowd or good commentary. This time it had the hot crowd. They tried the twin magic with two people who didn't look like each other one bit at the end. But it didn't take away from the fact that the Hart Foundation are superb. And this match was excellent. I could probably ramble on for a wee bit more, but I'll try and keep it as concise as this match was great. My number 46, Demolition versus the Hart Foundation from SummerSlam 1990.
Mighty, mighty pop when the final three count goes down there, as I can see and hear it now. You know, I can see the crowd, I can hear it buzzing in my head. Piper screaming, what a match. Yeah, that's a mighty fine pick, my friend.
Thank you. And to your, I imagine, next mighty fine pick, your number 46, Rory.
Sticking with the tag team titles,
Edge and Christian, Hardy Boys, Dudley Boys, TLC match from WrestleMania 17.
Whoa, give me a choice. Second. That's coming up quite soon for me.
One moment, gentlemen. Sorry. It's coming up. No, not soon. That one.
Not soon means it's later.
It does mean later. And you'll understand in a couple of matches' time why I was umming and ahhing then.
I think we've already worked that one out, but okay.
Yeah. I didn't work out Paul Bearer until 2018, to bear with me for a second.
Whatever could he mean?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.ProBoards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
So my 45 is my highest placed TV match from Raw is War from the 21st of May 2001, Steve Austin and Triple H versus the Canadian Chrises.
Ooh, not on my list.
Not on mine either.
Okay, for me, like I say, the highest TV match, four guys who I absolutely love. At the time, sorry, obviously not now. but for me, probably the perfect TV match. I think tag matches always work better on TV anyway. The crowd are so invested in the match, you know, and you finally get that cracking of the glass ceiling. We were kind of hoping the glass ceiling would be smashed. It doesn't quite get all the way there. And, you know, for all we can say about that anchor Triple H, that last 5 minutes of that match, for that guy to do what he did with that, with his quad basically hanging off. Just a superhero effort, almost.
Oh, it was heroic effort from him. Something I flip back and forward on this match. Is it actually a good match, or is it just well-remembered because of Triple H?
It's an exceptional match. I'll answer that for you.
Depends how I'm feeling on the day. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I might need to give it a rewatch, and I'll get back to you in that one. My number 45 includes one of the same guys. It is Steve Austin versus Dude Love, the Falls Count Anywhere match from Over the Edge 98.
Oh, that's coming later.
I thought I was going to be the low vote. Yes, coming later.
My 45, back to Mr. Triple H. Against Steve Austin, Three Stages of Hell, No Way Out, 01.
Later.
Ooh. Well, we'll talk about it later. I might have had that one either earlier or not at all. But we'll talk about it when it comes up. I know. That's one of the things about this. Hearing everyone's list, I'm now thinking that there's matches that I should have been on my list. But only 100, unfortunately.
So, my 44.
Yes, 44.
My 44. You'll understand why I was oohing and aahing earlier on. From SummerSlam 2000, it is the first TLC match between Edge and Christian, the Hardys, and the Dudleys.
That's coming up shortly.
Yeah, I've got that to come.
Okay.
So, my number 44 is Edge and Christian, the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys for the WWF title in a ladder match from WrestleMania 2000?
That's not on my list at all, except about WrestleMania 16 one, so off you go.
It's one of these ones that, as I mentioned the last time, if the match has got, as we said earlier, plunder in it, it ranks quite highly for me, because I do like a good hardcore type brawl. Building on the No Mercy match, which we're going to talk about later on, so I won't talk about it too much. It was different. It was six young guys, although the Dudleys might not have been too young, but they were new and young to the WWF at that time, going at it on a big stage, doing what they do best. They would get better, but I think it was different enough that I couldn't put it off my list, because it does show that it was the peak of these three teams were the peak of the tag division. And it was just an excellent all-round match. A high point from a pretty poor WrestleMania. But yeah, great match.
Yeah, it's great. It really is. But it's a great spot fest. And they would do better twice later on. They'd make a match out of it. It's a great start. It's still a great starting point. And it's the highlight for me of the very patchy at best WrestleMania 2000. But for me, it doesn't quite hold up.
I can see it. They would absolutely get it, like build on it and perfect it. But I've put the matches in, the evolution of the matches in order at some place through my list. So No Mercy and then this one. But again, hint, others still to come. So Rory, you're number 44.
And my number 44, another one I had a really hard time ranking. Settled for it here. HBK's return against Triple H in the Street Fight at SummerSlam 02.
That one's still to come for me.
Okay.
So, Ben, you're 43
is an Intercontinental title ladder match from the Royal Rumble 2001. Chris Jericho versus Chris Benoit.
Ooh, nice pick. Didn't make my list, though.
Nope, same here. Fire away.
It's just a really good match. You know, I don't want to go too much, obviously, because it's Benoit and you don't want to bring everybody too down. But, you know, he was so good. So good at this time period. You know, there's certain spots in the match you can't really watch now. Like, you know, the chair to the face on the tope, for example.
Oh, no. I was going to say, yeah. No.
But, you know, things like the Walls of Jericho on the ladder.
Yeah.
That is exceptional work. Just a great, great match. 43, and I think that's a perfectly fair place for it.
Definitely can't argue with it. Can't argue with it being on the list. I think you're spot on in everything you say. I was going to mention the chair shot as well. Just if they could edit that out of the network, I'd watch it a lot. But yeah,
Even at the time, it was sick and not in a good way.
Yeah, there was no protection whatsoever. It was just steel, skull, concussion, and then, you know. Anyway, my number 43, again, speaking of hardcore plunder brawls, my 43 is from Backlash 2004. It is Randy Orton versus Cactus Jack.
Still to come.
Excellent.
Perfect. Here's one I think we can discuss for me at number 43, and that is the main event of In Your House Final Four, Bret Hart, Undertaker, Steve Austin, and Vader.
Yeah, 72 for me, I think.
Yeah, and it was in the 50s somewhere.
We've all got it. Excellent. I shall start. And be pay-per-view goodness yet again. What you going to do in that dead fallow spot between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania? A four-way main event between your four biggest active stars at that point? Yeah, I can be convinced of that. Reason this one is so high, just outside the top 40, is one man, that's Vader's performance. This is as good as it got for him in the WWF. Overlook,
Oh, no, he did get to pin Shawn Michaels in a match I mentioned earlier, but that died very, very quickly. At least his is the Vader I really want to remember. His eye might have disagreed with me at the time. But,
I was going to say, his eye.
There is a reason that image made the front cover of Raw magazine not long afterwards. And he wrestled and fought, and I do mean fought, like he had something to prove in this one, even putting Bret Hart in the sharpshooter himself at some point. Yes, this was a thing that actually happened. Only slight knock against it. I've never been too fond on the over-the-top rope elimination here. It's 25 minutes again for a battle royal. If I was the cynical type, I would say that was in there so Undertaker didn't have to take a pinfall or submission loss, and I am the cynical type, so there you go. Again, didn't let up for a whole second. No matter which combination of these four we got to see at any one time, they were bringing it as if this was the most important pay-per-view in the world and not the timekeeper between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And of course, storyline, hugely important as well. Do go back and check this one out. If you've understandably overlooked it, the In Your House Final Four main event, Bret Undertaker, Austin Vader, my 43.
I can't add into that. It was great.
Vader's finest hour in the WWE. Apart from Monsoon attacking, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm just a big fat piece of shit.
That was a year after this.
I see what you mean about the over the top rope, pointless in a fatal four way. I kind of got it because they were redoing the final four for the Royal Rumble, so you kind of had to have the over the top rope.
Yeah, it was recreating that Rumble finish, wasn't it?
It doesn't hurt it too much. It was a brilliant match regardless, but yes, kind of shoehorned in for possibly cynical, possibly accurate reads. So 42, Ben.
42. I'm without looking too far, I think I'm pretty sure this is the most recent match on my list. It is from last year's NXT TakeOver New York. It is the best 2 out of 3 falls for the NXT title between Mr. Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole, baby.
Not on my list, baby.
You know the rules, baby.
We'll mention his arms as well, guys.
Hi, Peter.
I know a lot of people are down on this match because of the whole, Gargano giving a fall up only to equalize a fall a minute later. But I just love the work. It's two quote unquote indie darlings knowing exactly what they're doing. They've got that crowd on, the edge of the seat, probably standing up during most of the match. It suffers from the usual NXT thing now of where, Adam Cole's meant to be the most hated heel in the building and is probably one of the most over faces. But I can go with that because it's a great match. And once the cage comes down, all bets are off, basically.
I've not had hands up. I've not seen this match. It's got TakeOver written all over it. I'm just having a look just now to see the time. So 38:25.
Oh, it's a long one.
If I don't watch, this is going to sound really bad, but see if I don't watch a TakeOver straight away before I know what's going to happen, I'll not go back and watch it if I know there's a long match on it, because it's just me. My attention span for long matches isn't fantastic.
Yeah.
If I know it's going to be a long match, I've watched some that are like long epic ones and they don't feel like it. But I don't know. I just watch it and I'm thinking, right, I know this is going to be 40 minutes of my time. Again, that might be bad. But if it's a good match, it won't feel like 40 minutes. But if you look at, so TakeOver New York, opening tag match 18:50, Dream Matt Riddle 17:35, Walter Pete Dunne 25:40, Shayna Baszler, Belair, Shirai and Kairi Sane 15:45, and then you get 40 minutes on top of that. I'm looking at that going, I probably never watch that show. I will at some point, because it's a TakeOver and you're guaranteed it's going to be great, but maybe during the summer when I'm off uni and I'm on my summer holidays.
Well, you can invest the time in it.
Yeah, when I've got time and I know I can sit down and not be interrupted, I don't need to take the dog for a walk, I don't need to have nap time for myself, because at 2 o'clock you get tired doing nothing, and I don't have work in the morning, I'll sit down and I will do it.
It's the one day of the week where you won't be watching Battleground 2014. You know, you've got to get all of this stuff in. You've got to take it all into consideration.
Shite bag.
We found out on Sunday how bad Callum is at tactical napping, so...
But I stayed up to the very end. You better fucking believe it.
You did stay up to the very end.
He was fact, up when I, it counted, as
they
say.
Did I? Hey. Missus.
He was flagging a bit, but he stayed up.
I stayed up. Did I see the end? What happened at the end? Can anyone refresh my memory?
I think some bloke called McIntyre won. That might be wrong.
Ben, don't. Oh,
yeah. Yes. First of a British.
Give him what he wants, why don't you?
First of a British Royal Rumble winner. Come on, we can all bask in his glory. He might not be Keith Lee, but we can bask in his success.
I see what you did there.
There we go.
And interrupting slightly, breaking news, you're going to be facing Man City, Rory.
Okay. Bring on the demolition. Yeah, okay. It's a nice day out at Wembley, isn't it?
Who knows? Stranger things have happened. Leicester won the Premier League.
This is true.
We had this 9 years ago. It was a nice day out. It was a nice day out.
I remember your mob. I had Bolton to win, and I was going to win £300 in the semi-final, and then you were out and absolutely pumped them.
The greatest game of football I have ever been to, and nothing will be. I said at the time, because obviously I'm not married, I've got no kids now, but I said at the time, nothing's going to beat this. I know what's going to come on my wedding day, and I know there's going to be a baby at the end of when my wife gives birth, but nothing's going to beat this. I didn't know we were going to win 5-0 at the home of football. That wasn't meant to happen.
I remember it was a sunny Sunday afternoon.
It was.
All my games had come up. Bolton, this is when Bolton were good. And you were out and out of nowhere won 5-0 and it cost me £350. I watched it, and with every goal that went in, my heart broke a wee bit more. And Tony Pulis to this day has never given me that £350.
We were 3-0 up at half time and we were still nervous.
So was that. And Bolton never came back either. I'm glad Bolton are down there now.
Not bitter, but
to be honest, they could have kept it. If they kept a 300, I'm glad they kept a £300 because they're still in business now because of it.
It's actually very true.
I shouldn't laugh. As Airdrie, when you might remember this, unlikely, he says, Airdrie did go under at one point back in the early 2000s. So I know how bad it is. But
that, yes.
Yeah. I do know what it's like, but still, fuck them.
Schadenfreude. Anyway, our top 100 anyway, pro wrestling WWF thingy.
Back to this.
Oh, okay. So, staying within the UK, from NXT TakeOver Chicago, my number 42 is Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne for the UK title.
That was my number 69. Tee-hee-hee. Go on, I'll let you start.
Oh no, I was going to see if it was on Rory's list.
This is what made
the UK title probably worth it, because you got they did the UK title tournament off the back of World of Sport getting announced, and people thinking rightly or wrongly that World of Sport was going to be a thing at that point. It would be a thing later on, but it was gone at that point. They did the special, WWE did the UK title tournament, and just as quickly as each other, they were gone. Bate and Dunne were your two main guys, and they showed why you were the two main guys, and they proved why NXT UK would probably be a thing. It was a fantastic match, probably not the best that the two would put on, because they just keep getting better, Tyler Bate especially. But my God, what a match it was, and it sort of announced British wrestling to people who maybe didn't know it already. It announced the UK title, made it mean something. And then Pete Dunne obviously went on this monster run and is now doing puns at TakeOver for Matt Riddle, which were fantastic, by the way. I didn't know somebody with that dour look on his face could be so, had such comic timing, but fantastic. But yeah, excellent match.
Don't be blunt. Let's get on with it. It was just a great match, wasn't it? You know, 20-25 minutes. And again, like you say, just put the title on the map. Never mind the opening tournament. Was this about 6 months after the tournament? Am I got my timing totally wrong?
You're probably about right, because this was the same weekend as Money in the Bank, so that would have been June or July.
Yeah.
So you're probably about 6 or 7 months, yeah.
And they were basically trying to do everything they could to beat World of Sport before World of Sport started, and they pretty much succeeded.
Oh, absolutely. Have you seen the interview that William Regal just did talking about Mark and Joe Coffey, by any chance? You might know.
No.
I think it was only, he was talking to a Scottish guy now that I'm thinking about it, who they were talking about. And he basically said that there was a list of guys that he wanted because he'd been doing all the tryouts when they were in London and all these places. And there was people who wanted to do NXT UK, but they couldn't do it because of World of Sport. And you think for that one special, what NXT UK could have been right from the very start. We did get it eventually, but you're now getting Joe Coffey 40-minute main events, which is, you know, less than
a bit. They were very clever, because obviously they got Jim Smallman involved, and you know, so they had that sort of natural door in with Progress, and then he got a load of people to sign away, and I think it'll be a brand that goes on from strength to strength, because it still is a great untapped market in this country for that nationwide wrestling organisation.
Yeah, I've got my opinions on what they could do better with NXT UK. It's good, don't get me wrong. As you saw by the last takeover, that is so much talent there. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've got my thoughts on how they can make it better. I've also got my thoughts on the people who think that NXT UK is ruining British wrestling. I have got a very strong opinion as to why those people are wrong. Very wrong.
That will be an opinion for another day.
If you want, that could be my popular opinion. If you want,
it was like things like, I remember when it was on live, wasn't it? And Tim Cable said about things like the Empress Ballroom. It's just nice to see a building with a bit of character, not just some nameless, faceless arena.
It is. The WWE's problem on the main roster is most of these arenas, it's the same anywhere you go. Most of the arenas all look the same when you're inside.
Yeah.
The ballroom looks different. You get places like Madison Square Garden that look different. Even back in the day, all the places when the lights went down back in the 80s, everyone looked the same, apart from Toronto, because it had the ramp that went all the way up the ring level. You've got to have places that's got the wee bits of character in it, and we've got plenty of them around.
Different is good.
Yes, exactly. And for a differing opinion that's not NXT, Rory, you're number 42.
crafty. My number 42. Position of this might surprise a few people, especially it's coming later in the list than a certain other match between them, but two of them. But nevertheless, it's Edge and Christian and the Hardys from No Mercy 99.
I've already mentioned that.
I've mentioned that.
Yeah, I thought I might be the high vote on this one. Yeah, and I've got this one ahead of the WrestleMania 17 TLC match, behind another one, which we will, of course, get to a bit later on. This one builds on your point, Callum. I don't think we have the ladder matches as we know them today, for better or for worse, if it's not for this one. And unlike the WrestleMania 16/2000 we talked about earlier, this is a match with spots in it. It's not a spot fest.
helped by the fact that these teams had faced each other a lot beforehand. They were tied in the tit. Oh, I can say that out loud. In the tit. Terry Invitational Tournament Series was right there, but I digress. A Terry Invitational Tournament. Gonna grab one. They had four matches against each other in the previous 2 weeks, I think it was. So, you know, they obviously knew each other inside out, back to front, every which way but loose. But they hadn't given the opportunity to give us this type of match before. And the spots are, to this day, they're still pretty damn jaw-dropping, awe-inspiring, all the ings you want to say. However, none of them feel reckless. They're not dangerous. They're not...
They're calculated.
Calculated is a very good word for it. They probably are career-shortening, but for the sake of my argument, they'll say they're not career-shortening. Just so I can say a third thing in that annoying voice cadence. That's the only reason that's there. A match, this is a strange one, a match that hasn't been forgotten. I still think it's just seen as the prologue rather than a very important chapter in its own right. Mm-hmm. And it's one I would choose, certainly over WrestleMania 2000, not on my list at all, and indeed WrestleMania 17, although it is only just a few spaces. But Edge and Christian Hardy's ladder match from No Mercy in 99, my number 42.
I watched it a couple of weeks ago. I'll tell you what the most, and tell you what I took away from it, the most telling thing. Watch the crowd in it. That match starts. It's a deafening silence at the beginning of that match. Literally 10 minutes later, everybody's on their feet. They are getting a standing ovation. I think it's the spot when Jeff does the seesaw thing off the top rope.
Yes, it is.
And the crowd just erupts. And I haven't seen a reaction like that very often in wrestling. Just that thing of taking four guys who the crowd do not give a shit about, and then 10 minutes later they are wrapped in it.
You said cut.
Bro.
No, it was yeah, quite right. It's You don't have that match. You don't have, as you say, for better or for worse, ladder matches as they are today. It was a great match. They would evolve it,
of course.
But you've always got to have a first, and if your first is that good, you kind of go wrong.
It stands up on its own right, I think. I can almost,
yes.
Well, I've just called it a chapter. You can watch it independently of what.
Yeah.
Came next, and it still will. I think that's why it's so high in my list.
Mm-hmm.
And even more importantly, the animation of Jeff grabbing the money eventually found its way into the No Mercy video game for the N64.
Oh, there you go. Timeless.
Dig, dig, diggity, dig, diggity dog.
Fuck off. Ball. Oh, memories. Thank God for video game emulation. I mean, thank God for CEX, where you can buy these games legally.
I think now's a very good time to move on to number 41.
41, I am 95% confident I am the low vote on it, so I'll be very quick. It is from WrestleMania 8. It is the WWF title match between Randy Savage and Ric Flair.
Oh, I've already mentioned this.
Have you? Oh, I'm not the low vote then.
You are the high vote because I don't have it.
Oh my God, I am totally wrong.
Yeah, you're the high vote on this one. Go first. Take us off.
Yeah, people talk about the story in this, don't they? They say, you know, it's not a great story. You know, the story's tacked on after the match. So bloody what sometimes? When you've got two of the greatest of all time going one-on-one, so bloody what if you've got to add an angle on afterwards? It's just a great match. Flair, you know, you can say what you want about the blading in it. You can say what you want about perfect cheating on the outside. It all adds to it. He's healing it up magnificently. It's probably Savage's last great moment in the sun. We weren't to know that at the time. We thought he'd be around for a good few years, but sadly not. And I love it. It's also one of the great underrated Bobby and Gorilla commentaries as well.
More on that WrestleMania 8 when we get later on my list as well on those two, although that one's not so underrated. The commentary at WrestleMania 8 from start to finish lifts it up a couple of spots in the WrestleMania rankings, in my opinion. We talk about a certain other event slash match. I think WrestleMania 8 is their event apex, to be honest, as a commentary team.
Yeah.
Yes, this match, I had it down at a very respectable number 55. There are some people out there who to this day tell you this should not have been the match we got at WrestleMania 8, but we did. Savage had a Savage match. Flair had a Flair match. Savage had a match against Flair. Flair had a match against Savage. There's nothing else I need to say.
It mixed beautifully.
That'll do for that.
I've only seen bits and pieces of WrestleMania 8, the old, like the good stuff. But for some reason I don't know why I didn't pick it, but for some reason it just didn't quite make the cut. Which I'm now regretting. Anyway, moving on to something that I hopefully don't regret. My number 41 is Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream versus Killian Dane versus Ricochet versus EC3 versus Mitch Bennett, I mean Lars Sullivan, for the North American title at TakeOver New Orleans.
That was my number 84.
Oh.
Aside from the fact that you've got all-round scumbag Lars Sullivan in it, who, to be fair, doesn't do much anyway. Like, you've only got Lars Sullivan in there for to say that he was in the match. He done fuck all.
Let's face it, sorry to interrupt. You've basically got the two big men in there just to catch people off ladders. That's their whole job in that match.
But, yeah, I mean, at least like Killian Dane can hustle. He can move. But Lars Sullivan, you might as well just put him in as a fucking foundation for the building. He's useless. He serves no purpose to that match whatsoever. How he is, and EC3 to a lesser extent, how these two are part of one of the top 100 matches in WWE history, I'll never know. But you know, such is life. At least we had Cole, Dream, Ricochet. And Killian Dane provide some.
It's four work. Guys, and then the other two just happened to be in the match.
But this was ECC. This was his big re-debut, or debut, because I think he probably went to forget about Derek Bateman. To be fair, Ricochet, his big debut. He's done all right for himself. He actually helped eliminate Brock Lesnar with eventual Royal Rumble 2021 or Drew McIntyre.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Right, back to the match. It was a very, very good match. Six guys four guys and two fucking hangers on who had a very, very good match. The Dream, again, it was another excellent performance with the Velveteen Dream. Adam Cole, you could probably have thought was going to win going into the match. Ricochet probably would be your other one. But if you've got two guys who you think are going to win, you don't actually know who's going to win as the match as well. Predictability is never very good. But yeah, it was a bit of a spot fest. There was a lot of things happening by most of the guys. But it was still an excellent match.
Yeah. I can't disagree with any of those points, and that's why I had it in my list.
My number 41 is Bret Hart versus Bob Backlund again. Of course, not from WrestleMania 11, but the submission match from Survivor Series 94.
He loves a bit of Bobby. No, he's not a man.
A little bit of the Bobby. yeah, not in mine either.
Yeah, it's the second Bret Hart Bob Backlund match, isn't it? Therefore, the second one, which is probably, I can almost hear the shaking of the heads of people's listening devices that I've had this one in here. This one in particular gets one hell of a bad rap these days. You hear it all, nothing happens, it's boring. I value other people's opinions, but they're all talking utter fucking bollocks. It's not freaking boring. It's not. The two don't necessarily mean the same thing. It's over 30 minutes because of the style they're working. Now, and it stands to reason that it's going to be half an hour. Brett's going to stay in the chicken wing for almost 10 minutes. That's the whole fucking point. If he's not in a chicken wing, for that, how can they tell the story with Owen on the outside? Anything less than that would be rushed. It doesn't give him a chance to do his Academy Award winning performance there. That's probably the one positive thing people remember from this match, but the work to get there is exquisite. Again, it's not for today's taste. You could not put anything remotely like this on pay-per-view these days without the below-the-line yahoos shitting on it, but what do they fucking know anyway? Because it's probably not on your list. Oh, twat. Bret Hart versus Bob Backlund, Survivor Series 1994.
Jesus!
Just say what you think, you know.
If it is on your list, then I wasn't talking to you, obviously. Bret Backlund, Survivor Series 1994.
List, Ben, I don't know what you're
saying. My number.
Sorry. You know, I thought we were getting on well here, boys. I thought we were. Mumble,
Drew McIntyre, mumble. Okay, right. That was the last episode of Special Relations Podcast. I've already been off in one.
I went easy on you.
Really? Moving swiftly on before Glory has an aneurysm.
My friend, number.
Yes.
So number 40. I know with 100% certainty on this one, I'm the high vote because I distinctly remember you two talking about on our last show. From WrestleMania 3, it is the WWF title match between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant.
Yes, indeed. I had it way back in the mid-90s. Yes. That's 95. Okay, I just want to get this one out of the way. The other three matches I've got in that group as well, because we're all going to be higher. Hogan Warrior, Brett Bulldog, Austin Rock. Can we talk about Austin Rock from 17? No, not yet. And no. Hogan Andre. Yeah, I mean, you can't be a wrestling fan if you deny the importance of these ones. And I wouldn't even begin to attempt to try. I'm not that stupid, quite frankly. But and I do kind of wish now I had tried to rank these ones properly, inverted commas. I just almost felt like I just had to pay lip service to them, stick them in the first 10 and move on. I think my thought process at the time when I came up with this list that was something along the lines of, yeah, I know these matches are important, but they're important in the way that the Doomsday Book is important. I mean, you know, yeah, okay, the Magna Carta probably set the rules by which we conduct the basis of our lives, you know, but there isn't a copy of it by the side of my toilet for a reason. You know what I mean? So that's what I was thinking. Yes, stick them all in there, but not mention them again. That I do kind of wish I'd ranked them properly now. But at least they're all in there. So I don't need to talk about those four again. You guys, you can talk properly about them now.
I can just be quiet on this one. Same as Rory. This was in my historical significance category, along with... Fabio Smula against Wendy Richter, all the historical significance right in there. So fire away, Mr. Locke, for the high vote.
I'm not gonna go too much, guys, because let's face it, I think we've all spoke about it at length at some time in life. It's one of those. It's probably the only match in this list where if somebody put it at number one or number 100, you can't argue about it. It's gonna be in everybody's list somewhere along the line. I put it here at 40. Like I say, it wasn't just match quality I was factoring in. It was everything. The crowd heat, the commentary, the angle behind it. You know, if you're talking just as a match, you're talking two stars tops, aren't you? But that's not what it is. It's if I was a slightly older, I'd probably rank it even higher. But I'm probably the generation behind, where it doesn't mean as much to me as it would do to somebody who was a teenager in the 80s, say. But I'm happy with it at number 40.
No,
very
on.
Fair. Very
spot
fair.
On. So moving on from the irresistible force and the immovable object, I have got many objects. I've got 3 objects in my next match. I've got tables, ladders, and chairs. It is the next in the evolution. It's the SummerSlam 2000 Edge Christian Hardy Dudley's match.
That is still to come in mine.
Yeah, my number 44, so we'll talk about it in a bit.
My number 40 does involve one of those items of furniture, a ladder, in fact. Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho in their ladder match from No Mercy 08.
Yeah, already mentioned it. My 49.
And already mentioned that's not on mine. So fire away, sirs.
I'll kick us off on this one. I remember being ever so slightly disappointed the Raw after Unforgiven, when Michael set the stip for the next match and he came out brandishing a ladder. I remember thinking at the time, yesterday you wanted to kill him and now you're setting up a match where the object is to effectively run away from your opponent. And so there's a pang at the back of my head thinking, yeah, the match is going to be good. But here we are 12 years on. I have eliminated the but and I've added a very, 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 very before the good. Because this was a extremely different style ladder match to the ones we've used to and those which have become or were minted and first inscribed by some of the matches we talked about recently. This was heavy on the psychology, low on the spots, and it was all the better for it. And how refreshing that the finish was so basic A1 level. They're just both grabbing the belt and Jericho just happens to do it first. Now, isn't that just nice that we can have a finish that simple sometimes and it not feel like you're having your intelligence insulted? They both want the belt. In the next 2 or 3 seconds, one of these guys is going to get it. It's just Jericho on this day. Tremendous matchup. One of those where you can't really break it down word for word because there's so much going on up here, points to head, rather than elsewhere. Just one of those you really need to watch. I'm very happy with this one making my top 40. Michaels Jericho, No Mercy 08.
Yeah, just reinforcing what Rory said. You go from those sort of big spot fest heavy matches, and it's just nice to have a ladder match with psychology and the storyline within the match. You know, Shawn at that stage, as well as beating up, he wanted to beat up Jericho, obviously, for what he did to his wife the month before, but he also just wanted to take the title from him, and they built it beautifully throughout the match. And when the finish of the match is just a simple headbutt off the top of the ladder. No, nothing fancy. It didn't need to be anything fancy, because they built the psychology into the match.
Again, simple is always better.
Yep.
I get the whole you've had the unsanctioned match, why are you then having another one? But the unsanctioned match came before Jericho won the title, so that was in the middle of the show, and then Jericho at the end crawled in and basically stole the world title
during the scramble match, if my memory serves correctly.
Yeah.
Aye. So Shawn, I can see the reason for it. Shawn's like, at the end of the unsanctioned, goes, that's it, I've done it, I've beaten him. I've beaten him to within an inch of his life. And then by the end of the night, he's going, oh, you fucker. It's like, I'm just going to take his title now. So I can kind of see where it's come from. And it's not just extending it for the sake of it, but it was an excellent, excellent match. Aided by the fact that when Jericho comes down, he loses a tooth when the ladder comes and dinks him as well.
Yes.
What a champion. So I think that's us now top of the pops, guys. We're in the top 40 now.
Woo!
So Ben, you're number
39.
Am I right? You're number 39?
My number 39
is
from Extreme Rules 2012, John Cena versus Brock Lesnar.
Still to come.
Excellent.
Controversial again. I don't think it's on mine. No, Jesus, no.
Oh, my.
I know.
Mr. McDougal.
I know.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Try and redeem yourself with your number 39.
He's got another Shane McMahon. He's got another Shane McMahon match coming. That'll be it.
That ain't going to help.
Not quite yet.
What have we got? Oh, God.
My next match is Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid from Action Zone.
You have very much redeemed yourself, and I had it.
I haven't got it, so go for it.
I had that one at 48. Go on, Callum.
I think this might have been one of the this may be one of the rare matches that was covered not from a Raw on a certain other podcast that talks about wrestling from 20 years ago. Because it is just such a legendary match on like the seest of sea shows, but it's four guys who go out and obviously like working with each other, and they just have an absolutely brilliant match on a show that probably nobody watched at the time, if I'm honest. But that's probably why it's a hidden gem that is no longer hidden. And obviously these guys are going to have a good match with each other. No selfishness whatsoever, because they're all best pals. And you can, it's stuff like this that you can see why they thought they should have been on top more than anyone else, because they are fantastic when they're all paired together, and why they would want to be on the top and keep working with each other. They didn't have to go about it in such a dickish way, because they've got stuff like this to back it up. But it's an absolute cracker.
Yeah, they were great, and they knew it, and they wanted to make sure that we knew it. But this is the best example of us being sure that we knew it. It is warp speed. The Michaels and Kid interactions in particular are blink and you'll miss them. So just don't blink, quite frankly. Diesel and Razor, obviously, had singles matches against each other throughout the year, so their exchanges are fine. The selling is good. The ending is really good as well. This was one I watched a few years after the fact for the first time, not knowing the finish. And I was convinced that Razor and the Kid were winning this one, the way that they got Diesel literally tied up towards the end and found a way out of it. And even on a F show like Action Zone, they put that much thought into the finish. And even if it had just been a bland, even something like a double DQ after the 20 minutes of goodness they've given us could have been forgiven. But that much effort into it shows the dedication these four did have. And yeah, having to deal with them on a daily basis, and rather anybody else than me, but from 27 years distance and just enjoying the quality of their work, I admit that I got the better part of that deal, so I'm going to keep on taking it. For those who haven't seen this match, or do want to know where you can find it, it is on the network. It's on the Shawn Michaels, it's a Heartbreak Kid, whatever the Heartbreak Kid home video is called on there. Those home videos they put up there about a year ago, obviously before the major network revamp. I think it's still on there somewhere.
Is it not something crappy like the Heartbreak Tour or something?
Or the Heartbreak Kid Express Tour, is it on that one?
I think so.
One of them cutscene home videos, isn't it?
It's on there somewhere.
The search quality on the network is now a 6 out of 10 rather than the 1 out of 10 it was. Just type them into the search engine and see where you get. But a marvellous, marvellous match. It was my number 48. Now it means my 39.
39, yeah.
Yes, Brett versus Bulldog from In Your House 5.
My number 50.
My 100 and... Number 100.
this is the one, and it's yet another example of lifting a nothing show. I mean, In Your House 5 is drac. It really is. It's nobody cares about the December pay-per-views anyway, and this was the first ever one. Oh no, sorry, Tuesday.
You mean to tell me you didn't like the hog pen match?
I did not like the hog pen match. Triple H went over in it, for goodness sake, you know. There end my love affair with Mystical Scholar. This one is Brett wanting to make this pay-per-view mean something, knowing at the back of his mind he was just the ultimate placeholder champion. He knew that. He's going to make those 3 months the best they possibly can. And Bulldog, I don't know where he got this one from. The ultimate as good as his opponent wrestler. This is, you're adding 5 or 10 percentage points onto even that. Now, where was this guy hiding? He's always been there, but my God. He went with Brett toe to toe, right down to taking the corner bump head first after the Irish whip, because you would do, wouldn't you? You've got Brett getting a He's Hardcore chant with another crafty play job. You've got him winning with the magic spot, as taught to him by Mr. C. Jericho. Yeah, I love it. I love this match. It's so, it's hard hitting as well. Very different match for Bret in a way. He didn't have to have this type of match at this part of his career where he's just keeping the belt warm for that other fella. But my goodness me, did they ever. My number 39, in your house fight.
Yeah, fantastic match. Just any match where you just have the blood on the canvas like it was. I mean, it was literally smeared. And yeah, just so good, so good. And also gets big points for Jim Cornette's Santa Claus tennis racket cover. Which you just don't see enough of in December.
And Diana Smith's range of expressions going from concern to a bit of concern to a lot of concern.
Fart smelling.
That's Miss Calgary 19 whatever you're talking about with her resting concerned face.
97, wasn't it? Wasn't she wearing a scar, but an event we might talk about a bit later?
Might do.
Quite poor. Oh, yeah, she was Miss Calgary Stampede or something, wasn't she? Yeah. Oh, sorry, giving it away. Oh, yeah. Moving on.
No worries of a spoiler. 38.
38. Again, I know it's a match you two have already mentioned, so I'm the high vote. From WrestleMania 6, it's the ultimate challenge between Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior.
Yep, I've said all I need to on this one, so take it, fellas.
Historical context for me, so fire away, Ben.
I wouldn't say purely. It's a very sentimental pick, this. It was the first wrestling show I watched on video. So there you go, we've gone from DVD to video. My mum's best friend at the time, her son was into wrestling. He had WrestleMania 6 on rental. I watched it and I fell in love with it. And I'm, you know, so 30 years later, here we are. And it's a better match than people give it credit for. That's probably all down to Pat Patterson, but fantastic. And Jesse is on a different planet, frankly, on the commentary. That crowd is superb. Is it a one match show? It probably is, but what a match to be a one match show for. So there you go. That's my number 38, Hogan versus the Warrior.
Sweet, sweet WrestleMania 6. Chicken soup for the soul and all that, WrestleMania 6.
Some is better than the parts and all that.
Yep.
Aye. So my number 38 is Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect from King of the Ring 1993.
Not too long until we get to talk about that.
Yeah, it was my 48.
Almost there. So what's that? This is my 38, yeah? Just checking.
Yeah, 38.
38. Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle in the main event WrestleMania 19.
That was my 55.
Cool, let's talk about it.
I think I might have already had that one on my list. It's not to come.
Okay, I shall kick off with it while you scour your list again.
No, definitely, there is a match coming up between the two, but it's not this one.
Okay. Yeah, this is. I talked about treating Kurt versus Eddie from WrestleMania 20 as a main event a little bit earlier. This one was a proper main event, i.e. it went on last. And I still contend of the 35, as we record this, WrestleMania main events, this is the only one that truly feels in both build-up and execution, in as much as pro wrestling can, as a sporting contest. The only thing that comes close, WrestleMania main events I'm talking about here, is probably WrestleMania 12, but even that had its issues that I talked about on the last show. If pro wrestling, as we know it, with all its bells and whistles and extra connotations and the you-know-whats and the don't-mind-if-I-don'ts, if that existed as it does as a real legitimate sport, then this match is how it would look. Every move, every hold, every fucked up shooting star press. Okay, maybe not that bit. Everything else feels like two prize fighters wrestling each other with everything they have to pin the other guy's shoulders to the mat for a three count in order to win the biggest belt in the organization they work for. That is why this match is as high as it is on my list at number 38, Brock versus Kurt.
again. Yeah, I can't follow that. That was perfect.
Yep, absolutely. Again, not rocket science. I think this is what we should call the show. Special Relations, not rocket science. It's just.
How true is that? Yeah, this particular one has got its name anyway. This episode, not rocket science. I'm actually making a note of that as we speak.
So, Ben, you're number 37.
So, in the last pod, I alluded to matches that a Hollywood studio would make, and I think this match is probably the best example of that. It is from Backlash 2000. It is the WWF title match between Triple H and The Rock.
Great description, but hold that thought.
I will.
Alrighty, so I will complete the evolution with my number 37. It is TLC 2 from WrestleMania 17.
Hey, at last we could talk about it. What is my...
No, sorry, we can't.
Oh, no. Ben.
Sorry.
Don't have that much so high. for the record, I'll complete my sentence. I've got that one at 46, but we will talk about it at some point, I'm sure. Let's talk about a not dissimilar match, maybe, at number 37. The first, and for my money, the best Money in the Bank ladder match. You think I planned that? I didn't. Between Shelton Benjamin, Christian, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, Kane, and Edge from Mania 21.
I don't have it, that's what I was going to say. Well, I think we should plan to talk about that later.
Okie doke, I will be fine. Interesting.
So, Ben, back to you for your number 36.
Yes.
36 is from Vengeance 2005. It is the World Heavyweight Title Hell in a Cell match between Batista and Triple H.
Ah, yes, I had this one in the 70s at number 72.
Okay, fire away, boys.
Again, I just think it was a fantastic feud between these two. Save that whole sketch with the Batista being behind the door, hearing Flair and Triple H reveal the plan. We all knew what the plan was, boys. There was no need to do that.
It was stupid.
It was just the perfect feud cap because you knew, obviously, this was around the time of that draft, so you knew Batista was going to get moved over because Cena was already on Raw. They weren't going to have both champions on the show. The other two matches have been okay to that point. Not great. But this is a match that benefits from being in Hell in a Cell. A feud that benefits from being in Hell in a Cell. Triple H. Again, unselfish Triple H. Who'd have thought it? It does happen. You know, willing to bleed like a pig. I just can't say enough good things about it. Really can't.
Yeah, I had this one back in the 70s. I'm glad it made my list, though. Big boy moves, wasn't it? There's no fucking about here. Bring all the weapons. Just use the fuckers, quite frankly. Yeah. It's the only, if you're going to have a third match in three pay-per-views between Triple H and Batista in 2005, you know, you've got to have one of them where you let it all hang out. Great finish as well. Really well-timed finish, one they tried to replicate in other arenas later on and to much diminishing returns, in my opinion. Yeah, this one's just hard. I'll try that one again in about 20 minutes.
There we go.
Picking up from there, if we can, Callum, you're 36.
Yes, I will mention the match here because I think we'll have it later on. From TakeOver Brooklyn, it's Bayley versus Sasha Banks for the women's title.
You are correct.
By number 36. Mm-hmm. Very interested to see where this appears in everybody else's list. Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, WrestleMania 21.
That is higher on mine.
Yeah, higher on mine.
Low vote, okay. Continue then, please, my friend, Mr. Benjamin.
Okay. From SummerSlam 2001, it's the WWF title match between Steve Austin and Kurt Angle.
Ah, we have the second of our two-way consensus picks. I also have this at number 35.
Yay!
just a shame we can't talk about it now, isn't it, really? I'll remember it was at 35 for you both when we talk about it later on. My number 35, oh, yes. Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey from No Mercy 02.
Ah, get up, yeah. This is my, this, you can't talk about this just now either.
I was gazumped.
Not too far away, but we can't talk about it yet.
No, I don't think it's too far away in mine either.
Getting to the nitty gritty now. Number 34 then, Ben.
34 is from SummerSlam 1991. It's the Intercontinental Title match between Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect.
It's funny. I had that one back at number, he says, number 89.
And this one is coming up very shortly for me.
Okay.
My 34.
We're getting into the speed repeats now. This is good.
We are. We're now getting into the fast lane here. Number 34 for me, Cactus Jack versus Triple H, the street fight from the Royal Rumble 2000.
Later.
Here we go.
I think we could talk about this one now at 34. It's Bret Perfect again, but this time from King of the Ring 93.
Yeah, that was my 48.
Yes, then it was my 40s, or late 30s. I've not got it back in front of me, but carry on.
Yep, my number 34, and I think this blows the SummerSlam match out of the water, to be honest with you. That one made my list for semi-sentimental reasons. This one got it purely by dint of its quality. It's another one where all three members of the commentary team, Heenan included, are wrapped with what they're being treated to. It's a face-face match, which, you know, if you listen to our last volume, is something I'm always having a bit of a soft spot for, especially in tournaments. It's a semi-final. It feels like a semi-final. Now, what is it they say, guys? You know, obviously we're football fans, but semi-finals are always the more exciting matches, and the finals are normally the overly tense damp squibs.
Yep.
The King of the Ring final was pretty good, Brett beat Bam Bam, but I'm going to say my point stands here, even if it doesn't. Yeah, touching 5 stars. It's very, very close, certainly for the time period. Perfect here is clearly fully fit. His back is, you know, an actual back. Brett is in his Brett is in what Neil Tennant would call his imperial phase at this point. He could not put the merest of toes wrong, and the two have one sweetheart of a match in my number 34. Brett versus Perfect, King of the Ring 93. Oh, it's a goodie.
I just love that it was set up by the classic playground taunt. My dad can beat up your dad.
My dad's better than your dad.
Brilliant. No, it is a fantastic match. I didn't know about it until, genuinely didn't know about it until I bought one of the Tagged Classic DVDs. Because I wanted, I'm a sucker for a tournament. I wanted to buy a King of the Ring, and I bought that one. And it was just, I was blown away the first time I saw it. It was an absolutely brilliant match.
I would say it was Brett's best night. I would say finest hour, but you'd probably pick that point apart. But you know what I'm saying? His best night, you know, three really good matches against three totally different opponents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That probably
it's,
was
it's his pay-per-view, it is.
Yeah.
I'm just looking up here. It probably was his finest hour. Like literally, because his matches went on for
they probably were about an hour, just over the three.
20 minutes in the final, 20 minutes in the semi, and 10 and a half in this year.
There you go.
As they say, not a kick in the ass off it, as they say.
Get the entrances in, you probably have got an hour.
There you go. So I will not pick that apart. I will say you're absolutely spot on with your mathematics there, Ben. So that has moved us on now to 33
is the WWF title match from Over the Edge 98 between Steve Austin and Dude Love.
I have mentioned that already.
It's going to be a while, gents. Don't wait up.
So my number 33, Owen Hart versus the British Bulldog from Germany, Monday Night Raw, March 3rd, 97.
Not yet.
51, so carry on. And
I'm expecting to be not yetted myself when I tell you that Steamboat Savage from WrestleMania 3 is my 33.
to repeat your own words, a long time away, my boy.
I thought it was.
Coming up on mine as well.
Okay.
Ben, 32
from SummerSlam 2016, AJ Styles versus John Cena.
That's, you've got to wait for that one as well.
I've already had that one back at 77.
Right, I think for my 32, I might be the only vote on this one again. It's the World's Greatest Tag Team versus Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio from Vengeance 2003.
Yeah, nice pick. I watched that one specifically for the list. Didn't miss by much.
Yeah, same here.
I don't know what it is about it. Tag team wrestling matches from this era that are good tag team matches rank quite highly for me, because tag team wrestling, I can say this for any era, but in this era wasn't so much of a big deal. It's not really a big deal just now, but you know, as I say, at any point you could say that it seemed thrown together. I don't remember seeing a lot of build up from this. I bought the VHS after the fact, and I saw the match. I don't remember. It seemed to me like it was just thrown together at the last minute to put another match on the card, because you've got to have some build up to Vince McMahon against Zach Gowen, for God's sake.
sweet Jesus.
That made it even better for me. That these guys, so your World's Greatest Tag Team, like brand new, almost, they're less than a year. Excellent tag team. Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio, like, they're just fantastic as well. And they come and have a match that the crowd is genuinely interested in. And I always remember there's a near fall, like a 2 3/4, that the whole crowd bites into.
I was going to mention that. Was it when Kidman and Rey do a doomsday device on one of the?
Yeah, it's like a doomsday senton type thing.
That's it.
And you can see they're panning towards the corner, and every single person, to a man, woman, and child, every man and his dunk, as they say here anyway, went for it. They bit for it, and when it was 2 3/4, they were devastated. It was a great match. I'm thinking now it might be slightly too high at 32. It's probably not the 32nd best match in WWE history, but I think it's well deserving of being on my list.
It's excellent.
Yeah, no arguments here.
Damn fine. My 32 is HBK again versus Diesel again. In your house, good friends, better enemies.
Still to come.
Oh, I mentioned this in the last one. So we'll wait on Mr. Ben. So 31, Ben.
31. We can now talk about the TLC match from WrestleMania 17.
Excellent. Fire away.
I think, I can't remember which one of you said it earlier on. It's another great match from a great show, and that is what I fondly remember most about it. The six of them, plus Spike, Rhino, and Lisa, just wanted to go out and steal the show. They knew they were going to be up against a hell of a lot of competition here, and they pretty much did it. You could watch Edge do that senton off on Hardy off the where the belts are hanging forever. I think that is just amazing. And also with the Rhino's gore with Lita with the ladder just literally 2 inches away from her, her head was gonna crack open beautifully if it had been slightly more wrong on that, if that's a way of phrasing it. But yeah, just go out your way. Beautiful ring work. It's a spot fest. Yes, it is. But on this show, they knew they could get away with being a spot fest.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And I think it's the reason why it made my list as comfortably as it did, and the 2000 one didn't. It's just, you know, how many more times do we need to talk about the majesty of WrestleMania 17? That event, it does have everything. It's a cliche, but cliches are cliches for a reason, right?
Yeah.
And this one is more purely spot-based than another match we will talk about between these. But
this is, I think they'd earned a pure spot fest at this point. And even though it's not a mindless one, as you say, bringing in all of their seconds and giving them important things to do.
Right. Yeah, they weren't just there just to make the numbers up. Where
all
they were
three
given.
Of them. Mm. Exactly. Lita, Spike and Rhino do things which are important to the structure of the match. Yeah. That's, none of this is egregious. It's all for a purpose. And I don't like it quite as much as a match that came a few months before, or indeed the No Mercy 99 match, if I list it to be believed. But how can you overlook this one? It's iconic is another possibly overused word in wrestling fandom. I think this match deserves that particular description. Healthily inside my top 50, and so it should be.
This is one of the matches that I had really high. I think at one point it was 16. And it just kind of, as I went through my list, it came down and down. It was never going to miss my list at any point, for the reason that you said. And the thing I've just realised now about 17 is the more we've talked about some of the matches on the show, it's given the time. It's almost as if 7 days before last Nitro, they come out and somebody does a Paul Heyman-esque pre-match speech and says, "You've won the war, go out and have a good time and just kill it." And it always seemed as if that's why it's so perfect, because it's their celebration of winning the war.
Yeah.
And they go out and show why they've won the war. Excellent, excellent match. Anyway,
teary-eyed after that.
I know. I'll move on before I get
that
emotional.
That was beautiful.
Well done, boys. Well done. Okay, moving on. my number 31. I think we might be able to talk about this now. Possibly not. Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect from SummerSlam 1991.
You can indeed. You're the high vote on this one, so fire away.
It was a difficult choice between the two matches, whether it was SummerSlam 91 or King of the Ring 93. King of the Ring 93, possibly the better of the two matches. But I think SummerSlam is rated higher because of the circumstances surrounding it. It's a fantastic match as well. But the fact that it's a fantastic match when Mr. Perfect has got a back that is like pasta. As one of you said for the King of the Ring match, he's got a back that resembles a back. In no way did he's like the man shouldn't have been standing up, and he's taking the bumps only Mr. Perfect can. He must have been in absolute agony, and for them to pull off the match that they did is a testament to him and his professionalism that he could actually do that and wanted to put on a match like that. It is a very very good match without that, but knowing the circumstances surrounding it, that's what pushes it over the line for me.
Absolutely understood. So I had it back at 89. I almost feel a bit uncomfortable talking about this one after the King of the Ring 93 match, but hey, that's the card. Those are the cards you've dealt us there, Mr. McDougal. It's great, and it's in my list. And again, it's another one I probably wouldn't have slept entirely soundly the day I submitted my list if this wasn't in it. It's one of those matches where I've seen it so many times, it's pure black and white for me, and it's just a case of when I choose to watch it, whether I like it or not. It was lucky that the last time I watched this match, I really, really liked it. If I were to watch it again, say, tomorrow, I'd probably pick out a few more flaws and wouldn't deem it to be top 100 worthy. It's one of those matches for me. This project came along at just the right time for it to make.
It just hit the right point for you.
Great. And let us not forget the, I know Callum has tugged at the heartstrings with that valedictory speech he gave us there just a couple of minutes ago. even that pales into comparison with Stu Hart elucidating when interviewed by Alfred Hayes. What's his thoughts? I think he managed to get 1.5 syllables out before it was cut up.
We haven't got Aaron George here to do the impression. It's a shame.
And are your thoughts?
No, I think the King of the Ring match is the better match if we're talking just match quality. Yeah. I put this match higher because of its long-term impact and significance. And as Callum so eloquently put it, one of the wrestlers has a back like pasta. And that does deserve some respect.
just for the record, Ben, what number did you have it at?
I had it at, it was only a couple of matches ago, 34.
Yes, indeed. Well, I had the King of the Ring match.
Excellent. And I had the King of the Ring at 49, so there wasn't too much of a difference between the two.
Excellent. What have we got? My number 31, that's correct, isn't it? Yes. I believe this was mentioned last time. Bret Hart, Roddy Piper, IC title match, WrestleMania 8.
I mentioned it last time
too.
Oh, I'm the high vote on it. Get in. I do wonder if I might end up being the high vote on this one for all the contributors. Time will tell. Storyline matches up with the reality perfectly. The reality for this match is Roddy Piper knows that he is going to have to try and wrestle the very best he can to even remotely try to keep up with Bret Hart. In kayfabe, Roddy Piper knows that he is going to have to try and wrestle the very best he can to even remotely try to keep up with Bret Hart. Right? You can't change between the two. When we talk about Piper, everyone says the first thing they say about this match, and they're quite right, oh, Piper brought his working boots for that one. Yes, he did, because he had to. But Roderick Toombs had to as well. Because he knows that Bret Hart in 1992 is going to fucking wrestle rings around him in the way the match was booked. But he isn't going to let that happen. So when we do get to the immortal, what the hell, use the bell, give it to me, I'll hit him like then, beyond gold. It works because it's Piper. He's tried, bless him, to wrestle this guy, but he still hasn't been able to put him away. So he's going to have to, unless he can convince himself otherwise, take himself back to those bad old days of the mid-80s. In the end, nice guy Roddy Piper wins out. And 5 seconds later, look what happens. There's a lesson for us all in there, I think. Yeah. Unmatched, almost unmatched storytelling. High quality work. But Bret vs. Roddy Piper in the Intercontinental title match from WrestleMania 8 is my 31. I know I'm the one getting dewy-eyed.
That's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. It's not you. It's me. it's two of the greatest storytellers telling a great story. There's not a lot more I can add to it.
Nor me. I think it's you've hit the nail right smack dab in the head.
With the bell.
With the bell. Yes.
And then whack him in the back of a leg with a tire iron.
All right, boys. Well, I think it's happened again. We've veered off into a Carabao Cup tangent. We've gone on to other things. We've not quite made it again.
We've still got Drew McIntyre reference. It only takes 100, and look what happens.
Drew McIntyre, the guy who won the Royal Rumble this year, is going to WrestleMania.
He won the Royal Rumble this year.
Never mind a WrestleMania special. We would have done a Drew McIntyre special. I will take you from his debut when Dave Taylor was his manager, all the way through to his return to ICW, the Hydro, the Hall of Fame induction, all the way through to the Royal Rumble. Boys, it's going to be magical.
3MB or bust.
It's going to be magical. Fucking 3MB. Well, do you know what? He's going to be the second 3MB member to win the WWE title. He's going to be the best 3MB member to win the WWE title.
Agreed. I'm with you on that one. Anyway. So we will, ladies and gentlemen, our top 30 will be with you.
At some point.
And it will take another 3 hours of your time to get there. So I just want to make sure this goes on record. Thank you so much for listening to this. We have got some very loyal listeners.
You have all got patience of saints.
Absolutely.
For listening through this for 6 hours, and we've only got through just over 2/3 of a list.
But we're into the top 30 now, where
let's face it, there probably won't be too many surprises. We'll be able to rattle through that one in 2 hours 59 minutes.
Absolutely. So I think that's, yes, I think we'll be calling it a day.
I think it's bedtime.
What we don't want to do is ruin it for everyone. We want to build the anticipation. We want it to peak, just like Drew McIntyre won the Royal Rumble. We wanted to peak at the right time.
It's definitely fucking bedtime.
We will be back and we will finish this list before we have to. Do you know what, boys? We'll finish this list and then we'll need to do the WCW one straight away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fine. Anyway, so yeah, we'll call it a night there. So Ben, do you have anything on the horizon?
Nothing yet, though. I'm off next week, so hopefully I'll be able to get some things written up, but there's nothing coming up just yet.
All right, and where can the good people find you for feedback on your list?
On Twitter at BenL1981.
Lovely job. So if you have any popular opinions, popular or unpopular, send them Ben's way, especially about his list. Rory, where can the people find you?
You can find me at our podcast's Twitter page, that's Wrestling20YRS. I run the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, exactly as it says on the tin. Keep your eyes peeled for our January 2000 shows for the WWF, WCW and ECW. They will be dropping soon.
Good stuff. So, sold out 2000.
You sold out 2000.
Talking about patience, have I seen?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have I've got nothing on the horizon other than, you know, working through another 30 picks as quickly as possible. You know. You can find me for feedback, good or otherwise, at Callum7McDougall on Twitter. I say good or otherwise. If it's the otherwise, don't expect a response. So from the three of us here across the pond, Drew McIntyre's home country, thank you for listening. Thank you for putting up with us, and we'll see you next time.